Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
Dude, I am doing great today, Adam. We are 39 days away from the Batcat wedding as of this episode being recorded, so just over a month. I'm super pumped. We're obviously going to be talking about some Batcat on this episode, so that makes me even more excited, and we've got an awesome guest coming in. I couldn't be happier this afternoon, man. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Suffering through excessive heat over here, but other than that, I'm not gonna complain because we're usually worried about excessive cold. So I'll take it.
Right. So I love hot weather. The hotter it is, the happier I am. To be honest, I love super hot weather.
But yeah, other than that, I'm good. I'm excited to get to our I'll spill the beans. We're doing our Gotham season review.
It's not like the listeners don't know if they saw the episode description. So
yeah, by this point, they're listening to it, so they'll know.
Right.
But we're doing this live, so I have to pretend that they don't. Or we're recording this, now, so I'll pretend that it's live because for us it is.
You can give them one of those mind wipe things from Legend of Tomorrow.
And yeah, then or Men in Black. Or,
just, yeah.
But we do have a guest for this particular topic, and I think he's the perfect guest for this show. So why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest?
Yeah, well, we've got Josh here from the Gotham Chronicle podcast, which I'm a huge fan of. Once I finish introducing you, Josh, I got to tell you a story about when I was listening to your podcast one time. So, yeah, man, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. And all this talk about recording live. It's I've never been in a podcast recorded before, a live studio audience before.
Well, yeah, that's
I got to say, I love the format.
Well, let's pretend there's a live studio audience. If there was, they'd probably have left already. But anyway, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Okay. About myself, where to begin? Well, I guess what would concern the listeners the most is, my Gotham connection is I've been a staff member of the BatmanUniverse.net for almost 10 years now. And I was on there. I've been on more podcasts than I really have time to all mention off there. But, I've done various projects for the Batman Universe, and I've been on various of their shows. And when Gotham started up 4 years ago, I thought it might be fun to do a show on. So I started the Gotham Chronicle podcast. Dustin came up with the name for the podcast because he wanted it to tie into the Gotham Chronicle tie-in newspaper that the show was doing for, like, viral marketing. He wanted to kind of, like, cash in on that name. So I've been doing that show for about 4 years. It's been fun, and we've stepped up our coverage a lot this year. This last year, I interviewed the cast 5 times. I've done a lot of convention correspondence, so that's been fun.
And we usually ask our guests what if it's a Batman related episode, we'll ask what your favorite Batman movie is. So
and who your favorite live action Batman is.
Oh, right.
Okay, so and I listened to a few episodes that you guys did after you invited me to be on, so I should have been more prepared.
Thank you for listening. Hopefully your eardrums didn't suffer too.
No, I liked it. I was entertained. I was entertained. I should have thought about this more. This is a very, very controversial answer for favorite Batman movie, but I have to say, so many things wrong with this movie, but I love it all the same. Maybe Batman Returns. Either Batman Returns or Batman 89, but I love Batman Returns. And people are going to tell me, but Batman, you know, puts a bomb on a guy. Yeah, he does. And he shouldn't be putting the bomb on a guy. And yeah, you know, they got a lot of the characters wrong. And yeah, these people shouldn't kill. But you know what? Like, I saw that movie when I was a kid and I love it. And I can't unlove it.
Hey, well, both Adam and I love that movie, too. So we won't argue with you there, man.
Yeah, you're definitely not going to get any arguments from us on that front. So would it be safe to say that, I mean, I don't want to be presumptuous, but does your favorite Batman actor lie with Michael Keaton, or where's that?
You know, I don't know, because while Returns might be my favorite movie, I don't know, like, you know, when you think actor, you got to think, like, who channeled Bruce Wayne, Batman the best, and, you know, I really have to examine that. Maybe after next year, Davi Mazowz might be my answer, because he'll officially be a live action Batman at that point. Right. But in terms of the movies and in terms of who we got, well, I like the Michael Keaton movies the best. I think that maybe Christian Bale, like, did the best job at being a Bruce Wayne and a Batman.
Sure.
It's hard to say, you know.
I mean, and at the end of the day, it's personal preference. So nothing you say is wrong.
Yeah.
I'm with you there, Josh. Christian Bale is my favorite too, but speaking to David Mazowz, he's actually, I'm already willing to say it, he's my second favorite just after Bale. He won me over. I'll tell you exactly the scene when he won me over. At first, I wasn't real high on him at the beginning of season one, but the scene when he confronts Tommy Elliot and he has that line to Alfred where he says, there would be immense shame in that, when Alfred's trying to tell him, you know, there would be no shame in backing out of this. That's the moment when he sold me, and ever since, like, that's the first time I saw Batman. I was like, this is Batman right here. And ever since, I've been seeing more and more scenes where you see Batman come through, up until you see it all the time now in season four, which we'll talk about. But yeah, I'm totally with you there that you were talking about. He's climbing up your list. So yeah, he's number two on mine now.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I just, so everybody, I mean, we haven't released that episode, have we?
We have not released that episode. Okay, the ideal Batman casts, no.
Okay, then I'm going to withhold my, well, actually, oh, screw it, I'll just say it. On the episode, I said it was Bale. I said on the episode that it fluctuates depending on the mood I'm in,
between
Bale and Michael Keaton. Lately, it's been Michael Keaton. On the show, I said Bale, but I gave that caveat. But right now, in this current state that I'm in, it's Michael Keaton. So by next week, it could change again. We'll see. But
does that have anything to do with this awesome speech to those graduates?
Well,
where
listen,
Batman?
If you gave me that speech, my graduation sucked by comparison.
I was thinking, during my whole college graduation, I had headphones in the entire time, and I commented when I saw that video of Michael Keaton. I said, if he had been speaking at my graduation, I wouldn't have had headphones in the whole time. I would have been listening.
but that might have been it. Because I saw that, and then I had the impetus to go rewatch the two Keaton movies. It might have something to do with that, but we'll see. We'll see what happens next week.
So I was just going to tell that story real quick about
listening
to Josh's podcast, The Gotham Chronicle. That was one of the first podcasts that I ever started listening to. Once I started really getting into listening to podcasts, and I think I came in at the end of season one of your podcast, Josh, and I started listening from the start in season two, like for a full season. Season two was the first full season I listened to your podcast, man. And I have such vivid memories, because I was in college at the time. And I have vivid memories of specifically Batman Day 2015, okay? My college was in the middle of nowhere. And this is my freshman year, so I couldn't have a car on campus. And I took a bus, like 6 or 7 hours. Like, in a car, it would only been like an hour to the nearest city where they were having Batman Day events. Like, at Barnes & Noble does events, and GameStop does events. So I wanted to get all this Batman Day swag. So anyway, if I had a car, it would only take me like an hour, but I had to go on this like crazy bus route that took me like way out of the way in order to get there. Anyway, it took like 7 hours. It was a full day thing. It was ridiculous. But what got me through that bus ride was I listened to your podcast pretty much the whole time. And so I have a very vivid memory of that specifically 3 years ago now in 2015, listening to your podcast on Batman Day.
Well, we like to get people on long car trips, you know, do the bumper service. Do you remember what episode it was?
It was several, because I listened to multiple ones. Because I think I was catching up at the, like I said, I the first full season I listened to was season two. And so that was 2015. That was the beginning, right? It was right before season two started, I guess, or premiered. And so I think I was catching up on the end of season one, your final episodes, reviewing the final episodes of season one. And I think I started season two maybe on that trip. Yeah, I don't remember the specific episodes. I just vividly remember.
it was the Stella era.
Yes. Stella was on, Yeah, she was still on at the time at those end of season one episodes. So.
Well, I will say it's a great show, and I'm glad that when Jordan brought you up as a potential guest, I said, all right, let me go listen to the podcast so that when these guests come on, I have at least some familiarity, and it's one of the ones I do keep track of and listen to. So.
Oh, thanks.
Because often what I do is I binge listen to podcasts. So because I'll get not out of preference, just because I get behind. So then I build up on episodes. So that's usually my podcast listening habits, is binge listening. So that's just the way things go. But it's a great show, and I hope that even though Gotham is coming to a close, that you guys continue doing something with the podcast, because.
Yeah, the way I see it, we have at least another year, and that's what I keep on, and we'll talk about it with the news and everything, but, we have, a year to kind of say goodbye, and we have ideas for episodes to do over the summer and, and fall and everything like that, too. So there'll be, even though there's only 13 more episodes of Gotham, which isn't confirmed 13, that's just kind of the official rumor. Like, Fox and Warner Brothers have not actually confirmed an episode number yet, sure. But even though there's 13, I think that will be around for more than 13 episodes next season. We have special episodes planned. Even now I've contacted a few people about some interviews over the summer, and last night there's a group chat that Donovan and Jan and I have, and I was like, oh, we should do this song parody next year, and this one, and oh, why didn't I think of this? It's
Awesome. As much as I loved your old theme song, it has been, the fact that you can't use it anymore has been a blessing in disguise, because these song parodies have just been, I just have a blast listening to them every time.
That's really unique, so it definitely makes your podcast stand out for sure. So.
Some of them I'm happy with, some of them I'm not, and then sometimes I think if someone who I'm contacting to be interviewed on the show, they're like, oh, Gotham Chronicle, let me look this up. And then, if they hit the download button, then the first thing they hear is, Ben McKenzie. I'm like, oh, man. Is this going to, scare them off? Well, good news is, if you liked the old R. Kelly song and you liked the song parodies, then you will be very, very happy with how the next episode ends.
Oh, okay. So, I am intrigued.
There's an official tease. Yeah, there we go.
Well. Yes.
Cool. But let's get into the news, and then we'll come back to Gotham with our more of our season four review.
Yes. Well, it's some of the news, but I'm saving the Gotham news for last. So
sure. Yeah.
So that leads into that. Yeah.
Sure.
So first up, though, let's start off with our film news. The two most, the closest upcoming DCEU movies. Both, we got news for both of them. Really. Photo news, because we got two photos. First off, we got a photo of Zachary Levi standing next to this promotional image of him as Shazam, slipping this, Slurpee or something. This is not what I expected for the official picture to be. You usually get a more traditional one where it's not the actor standing next to a picture. But obviously, we'd already seen set photos of the costume. I was digging it already, but. Now that I'm seeing an official pic that looks really good, I dig it even more. I think this costume looks awesome.
Joshua, what's your take on the? Have you seen the image, and what is your take on it?
I've seen that around the internet. I didn't realize that was an official image, the studio.
People have made parodies release. Of it, but the original intent.
Maybe that's teasing what the tone of the movie is, that it's just going to be this goofy, lighthearted thing. If the official image is the guy sipping a drink next to the thing. But I think that the costume looks good. And one thing that people have said about these DC movies is that the color palette is too dull. You know what I mean? In these bright and colorful costumes, the colors are all dulled and stuff like that. But this looks like a bright, you know, costume. It looks like it's coming right from the comics. Zachary Levi looks like a fun Shazam, so I don't have too much to say because it's just like kind of a teaser image, but I'm hoping that that's indicative of what's to come, because I'm not even like a big Shazam fan. I don't hate him. I never read Captain Marvel, but you know, this looks like it could be a good movie that can get people interested in the character if they're doing it that way, and hopefully different from, you know, some of what DC's done in the past.
Yeah, I think for me, what you said about, you know, giving a sort of clue as towards the tone, I think is spot on. And look, the idea of, you know, it's been tossed around that Shazam is big meat Superman, and I think that's appropriate for the character. You know, I've read bits and pieces of the character. I haven't gotten on extended long runs, but I've read certain graphic novels and stuff. And, you know, for example, Jeff Johns backup issues in the New 52 Justice League book. And I think that's a very appropriate tone for that character. And the image definitely gives that off. It'll be something fresh and unique to the DC Films universe as it you know, exists over the last few films, which I think is needed. I think not everything can be, you know, serious and too serious. Like, not everything can be done through a quote-unquote Batman lens, which is what I think, you know, the DCU's films have tried to do, you know, the connected universe recently. So I think changing it up is a good thing. As for the costume, I'm with Jordan in that I liked it before. You know, the spy set picks, if you will. And now it has the official, you know, it's the official look, and it's been, you know, touched upon and stuff. I like it even more, and I'm sure it'll look even better on film. So, yeah, I'm all on board with this image.
Cool. Well, moving on to some Aquaman news. We got, in addition to the Shazam image, like I said, we got an Aquaman image too. And it's an image that surfaced at the, I think they were both actually from the licensing expo.
Yes, they were.
Oh, they were both from it, yeah. So this one it's a new Aquaman costume that's going to be debuting in his solo film. And it's this more, it's like this golden, like rugged look. It's less sleek than like the costume we saw in Just League. It's this sort of rugged armor type of suit. Personally, I dig it. I think it looks awesome. I mean, I loved his suit in Justice League. But I think this looks really cool as well. So, yeah.
For me, I'll just say this. I'm with you. I liked his look in Justice League. It's really hard to go into too much of the differences, because you're only seeing a partial shot of it. From what I understand and what I've read from articles, and there's the Aquaman Shrine website that's devoted to all things Aquaman. And they say it's going to be more of a comic accurate costume, but only in the sense that the main difference is that it's going to be armor. It's obviously armor, whereas opposed to the comic, which, you know, depending on how it's drawn, it looks like he's wearing, you know, sometimes it looks like he's wearing cloth clothing, whereas this will be clearly armor, but it'll be closer in keeping with the comic book look and design. So. But I'm in terms of the image, Jason Momoa looks badass as Aquaman, and I can't wait for that movie. Next up is the trailers. Bring it on. Joshua, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't have much to say about the costume, because it's I don't pay attention to like the subtle details of the costume, so I probably would not have noticed that it was different from the one that he had in Justice League. But I mean, I'm looking at the image, and you know, it looks like he has a similar enough look, but I couldn't tell you, you know, what about it was different the last movie.
Cool. Outrageous.
Yeah, that's. I hope it doesn't start. I don't think I could see that coming out of Jason Momoa's mouth. That's one.
I could see him. I mean, he wouldn't say it like that, but I actually think there's a pretty good chance he says the line outrageous at some point, but just obviously in a very
obviously not in that way though. If he does, yeah, yeah, true, yeah,
yeah. Like, I could see him, like you know, in one of the scenes, like, I thought he was going to do it in Just League. Like, in one of those scenes when he was yelling while he's riding on the parademon or whatever, you know, yeehaw or whatever, if he had said outrageous when he jumped off the
parademon. Yeah, it probably would have fit in there.
I could have seen him doing something like that.
Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, moving on to some comics news. This is my favorite piece of news this week because I am so excited about this. It's another costume. So much costume news this week. I don't know if DC, a bunch of people at DC from different departments got together and they were all like, let's all do costume reveals this week. But we got a reveal of Catwoman's new costume in the comics that she's going to be debuting in Catwoman number 2, the second issue of her solo series, which is coming out in August. It's going to be a monthly, so the first issue is coming out July 4th, same day as the wedding, and then this is coming out in August. And I'll just go ahead and say, I absolutely love this new suit. I think it's amazing. Honestly, I'm already almost willing to call it my favorite Catwoman suit in the comics. First of all, it retains a lot of elements from sort of the Darwyn Cook costume that I love so much as well, which obviously her current costume is very heavily inspired by that original Darwyn Cook costume. So it retains a lot of the elements from her current suit, but it also changes the cowl. So it looks a lot actually like Michelle Pfeiffer's Batman Returns cowl, which looks awesome. She's got openings in the suit now, which I'm sure on hot Gotham City summers come in very handy, and I'm sure Selena appreciates that. But I just think this costume looks awesome. Like I said, I loved her current suit, so the fact that it is fairly similar to that, I appreciate that, because obviously I wouldn't want them to change it too much, given that I love that suit so much. Mm-hmm. But the changes they make look awesome. The cowl looks awesome. I can't wait for her to debut this. First of all, I just can't wait for her solo series in general. I am so excited about that. And, I mean, in my eyes, Joelle Jones can do no wrong. She has so quickly jumped to become my second favorite comic book artist ever, just behind Jim Lee. And, obviously, she designed Selena's wedding dress, which just looked gorgeous. And now she designed this, which is just an incredible new suit. So, like, she is just on a roll right now. And I can't wait to see what she does, both writing and drawing this new solo series for Selena. I could not be more excited.
Joshua, what's your take on
I'm liking this costume. I said a little bit, you know, as we were getting ready to record that I was not a fan of like the goggles, and the goggles has been her look for like over 15 years now, and I didn't hate it. I didn't like cringe every time I saw it, but you know, it wasn't my preferred look for her. And usually, whatever you started with when you were a kid, like when you came into the characters, that's kind of your default. So
yeah.
I like this because this is closer to like the default from when I was younger. Like I like the cowl, you know, like, and you know, it's funny because we were talking about Batman Returns earlier. Mm-hmm. That is actually my favorite Catwoman costume ever. Mine and probably too. because I saw it when I was a kid and because Michelle Pfeiffer looks good in it. But, so I like this being close to, you know, the Michelle Pfeiffer one. That being said, the solicitation for issue 2 makes me really, really, really nervous because I'm hoping that the wedding is completed and that we are going to get a Bat-Cat marriage. But, like, that solicitation about, you know, something bad happening and Selena having to leave Gotham, you know, I was like, oh, please, please,
I'm not worried, dude. I'm not worried. Let me tell you why. This is what I've been trying to calm people down a lot about it. I'm so convinced that the wedding is going to happen as planned, and I'll explain to you why. Tom King has shown over the course of his run that he's a huge Batcat shipper, just like I am. He said that the entirety of his run is going to focus on their relationship, and he's I think he views them as endgame, just like I do. I do not think that his run's supposed to be 100 issues. I don't think he's going to let anything. First of all, I think they're going to be together the entirety of his run, but certainly not halfway through. I don't think he's going to break them up. I think I'm really confident things are going to go okay. Obviously, we know the Joker's going to try and put a wrench in the plans, but that's happening in issues 48 and 49 in the Best Man arc. I think Selena's going to kick Joker's butt in those issues, and then I think everything's going to be fine in issue number 50. Like, I'm not worried. I see what you're saying about the description for this issue, but I think they're just trying to mislead people. I really think everything's going to be okay.
I'm hoping so. Now, one thing that has me a little confident is they're bringing in all these artists, like, you know, Frank Miller and stuff like that to, like, help with issue 50. I'm like,
21 different artists on that issue.
Yeah,
so, you know, you're treating it like a big deal. And if, you know, he leaves her at the altar or she leaves him at the altar, or if one of them gets kidnapped, like, I don't think that they'd be doing it, you know, having all those artists for just an issue where they don't get married. But it's I'm hoping.
Yeah, you're right, because it feels like that's another great point. It feels like it's really shaping up to be another love letter to the history of the Bat-Cat relationship, just like Rooftops was, just like Batman Annual number 2 was, just like Batman number 44 was. So I definitely think, like, yeah, not to worry, dude.
Did you see the article on Batman 44 I did where, like, I pulled, like, the different scenes?
Yes, that was great. My favorite one... My favorite one personally is the one from the Hush interlude, because I love the Batman Hush interlude, the one in the Batcave, and so that was my favorite of all of them. But yeah, that was so amazing how that issue.
By the way, let me just say anything Hush related is great. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, Hush is amazing. Yeah. Hush is amazing. So, but yeah, that the way King replicated all those moments, and the way Mikhail Janine did too, replicating all those moments, of course, from the history of their relationship, was just incredible. But yeah, that was my favorite one, and great job with that article, dude.
Oh yeah, that was fun to put together, and so many people did articles like that trying to identify the scenes, and I'm proud to say I was the only one that could identify that rooftop scene, because everyone because those costumes were really off. You know, and it threw me off too, but I recognized that it was like Doug Mancera dialogue, so.
Yeah, you're doing Batman detective work on that. You're doing Batman detective work.
That's impressive, yeah.
It's the funnest detective work. It was an easier time than Donovan had, because Donovan had to, when Tom King did that for Grayson, there was like a lot more scenes to identify when like Tom King did a similar thing in Grayson. I wouldn't have been able to do it. I'd be like, there ain't enough hours in the day.
Yeah. For my comment, I think you're safe in terms of the wedding, only because, like I said, the buildup has been so prominent, and they are pushing it as this big event. To not have it happen would be a marketing failure.
I honestly do not know what I would do if it did not happen.
I think it'll last for Tom King's entire run. Beyond that, I doubt it. That's my personal feeling, but we'll see.
Well, I'm hoping. We know it's gonna. I'm so confident it's gonna last for his entire run. But I'm hoping that he sets a precedent where that becomes the status quo, that they're married moving forward, even once he's left the
book. Well, we'll see. It's Batman, and there's never really always a happy ending. So that's why. I'll believe it when I see it, when Tom King's no longer in the book. But
I mean, he's had a son for over a decade now, and Superman's married with a kid. It's a brand new world, you know.
Though they temporarily they doused water on that one with the New 52, right? He was running around with Wonder Woman for the New 52, so. They're not afraid to.
Yeah. and they hit the reverse gear on that one.
Right. Yeah.
pretty hardcore. Yeah, like, yeah. Within like, it would be funny if you were like reading the comics in 2015 or something, and Superman's with Wonder Woman. He doesn't have powers. He has that stupid haircut. It's the New 52, and you got hit in the head and you were in a coma. And you woke up from your coma a year later. You're like, wait, Superman's married to Lois again, and he has a kid. How long was I out for?
Yeah.
6 years? No, man, it's been 1 year.
Like, it's the same thing that's about to happen in the DCU AOM line. The Superman was with Wonder Woman last time we saw him, and now in the Death of Superman animated movie, it looks like they're going to make him be back with Lois again. So people are about to experience just that thing, I think.
Yeah, because continuity be damned. But anyway.
Well, I think there will be. I think they will explain it, but it would just be. I think it's going to be a little bit jarring.
They might eventually explain it, but what I'll say about the Catwoman costume is that I like it. I like the fact that, you know, the similarities to the Michelle Pfeiffer cowl is a big selling point for me. But it looks like a sort of, amalgamation of two different, the more recent incarnation, and arguably, and the Batman, it's got some Batman Returns flavor, so I think it's a mishmash of a couple costumes, and I like the look. I think it looks cool. So
And we just got the Michelle Pfeiffer suit back in full recently in the Traveler's arc.
Which I really enjoyed seeing. That was
amazing, And Josh, quick question for you real quick. I meant to ask when you were talking about it. I know you say you don't like the goggles. Personally, I love them. But what did you think of Anne Hathaway's version of the goggles in Dark Knight Rises? Because I thought that was such a cool take.
It wasn't my favorite costume, but I liked Anne Hathaway as Selina Kyle. I thought she did a good job, and she was, I love Michelle Pfeiffer, but Anne Hathaway was like the closest that we've had to like comics Selina Kyle. I think
absolutely, she's hands down my favorite live action Catwoman. But just in terms of the goggles, I was curious whether you dug that version of the goggles. They obviously were different than they were in the comics.
No, not especially, but I mean, I didn't hate it either, you know. Okay. And there's so many different versions of Catwoman's costume, as like Batman 44 reminded us anyway. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and like, plus the way it worked. Tell me if you guys agree. The way her quote unquote goggles, if you will, worked, were that when she flipped them up, they had cat ears.
Exactly. Yes.
And it was reminiscent of you know, like the mask that she wore, the eye mask, was kind of reminiscent. It was like a sort of, here's our nod to Batman 66 and the Catwoman on that show. And the goggle, quote unquote, aspect of it was a nod to the current run of the comics. So, you know, again, Nolan was doing sort of a mismatch.
Yeah, that's what I think is so brilliant about what they did there. Yeah, and that's not only is Anne Hathaway my favorite live action Catwoman, that's my favorite Catwoman costume too. Yeah, period. I mean, like I just said, this new costume is probably my favorite Catwoman comics costume. But if we're talking the all Catwoman costumes, it would be Anne Hathaway. I love that costume.
Cool. But since we've all given our thoughts on the costume, what's the next piece of news?
Alrighty. Well, next up, we will move into our TV news. Which, first off, good news, we got another DC TV renewal, which is that Krypton is coming back for season 2.
Awesome. I'm a big fan of Krypton. I love it. And I was worried a bit on there because it seems like the last few weeks everything's being canceled, or almost everything. So I was a little concerned, but I'm glad that it's coming back. And based on the finale, which we'll get into in our Krypton discussion, I'm so glad it's coming back, because what a way to, if that would have been the final episode, that would have been a terrible, frustratingly way to go out. So I'm thrilled that it's getting renewed. How about you, Josh?
Yeah, I've only seen the pilot. I'm probably going to get back to it sometime over the summer. But all right, there's
good. I'm glad I didn't say anything then, spoiler wise.
I mean, you guys can talk spoilers. I don't care. It's like I'm not sensitive over spoilers. So, like, you know, you could bring up the cliffhanger if you want to. But yeah, I liked what I saw in the pilot, but like there's just so many shows to keep up with right now, which is a blessing because, you know, like like when you have like multiple DC comics like shows to follow, that, you know, that's a good thing. It's you know, and it's funny how like we can get all eras of Superman's life, because there's a Krypton show, there's a Smallville show, and then, like, you know, Metropolis may or may not happen, and then, so, you know, we got all eras covered. And you know, my friends who are Superman fans are enjoying the show, which, you know, is important to me. Even if I'm not watching it, I like that, you know, they have something to see. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. But, great renewal choice. I'm happy with that. Yeah.
And I echo your sentiments. I'm very excited about Krypton being renewed. The season one, I liked it at the beginning, and then it just kept getting better for me, and it to the point where I was loving it by the end of the season. And you're totally right, Adam. If they, it would have been a real bummer if they ended on that cliffhanger. So I'm happy to see. I'm really excited to see, you know, the payoff of that, because man, that was awesome.
Yeah. I heard Brainiac. Brainiac.
Brainiac, by the way, when you see him, looks awesome, and you'll be wondering, like I think most fans of Superman, Why the hell haven't they brought him in? Why hasn't a movie been able to do what the TV show did with Krypton, with Brainiac?
Because the movies, just want to focus on Lex Luthor.
Well, yeah, that. But it's like, why? Like, if a TV budget can do it, why can't you? Is what.
Crossing my fingers, we get him in Man of Steel 2.
Well, let's get
crossing my fingers that we get a Man of Steel 2.
Yeah, let's get that announcement first, and then worry about who the villain is.
Okay, that's a good point. I think it's likely though.
You gotta pick your battles. Let's get the announcement first, and then worry about the villains.
Okay, fair enough.
Do you remember when that BVS was supposed to be Man of Steel 2?
Yeah,
like people were saying, oh, it's Man of Steel 2. It's just, you know, like yeah. People were like trying to explain how that was the Man of Steel sequel.
Yeah, it's
as much as I enjoy BVS, and I really do. One of my complaints about it is that I do wish that there was another Superman movie set in the 18 months between Man of Steel and BVS.
Yeah, you're not going to get arguments from me. I mean, we reviewed Man of Steel at length, and you know, you and I both love it. So seeing Henry Cavill again in his own movie would be really nice. Be Brainiac be the villain or not, I really don't care. Just give me another Superman where he's, you know, getting the full spotlight and not a co-star or a cameo. But when you catch up on Krypton, you'll enjoy Brainiac quite a bit. But what else is there, Jordan?
All right. Well, our last piece of news before we get into our Gotham news, and then the rest of this episode will just be a Gotham-centered episode, which I'm just very excited about. But we've got some awesome news regarding the Watchmen TV show coming to HBO soon. Mm-hmm. First of all, we've got some casting. Here's we don't have what characters they're playing, but we have the names of the
actors.
Yes. Regina King, Don Johnson, Tim Blake Nelson, Louis Gossett Jr., Adelaide Clemens, and Andrew Howard will all be starring in the new Watchmen show. And we've got some idea. Basically, Damon Lindelof explained what the series is going to be, and I'll just go ahead and read what he said.
Not the whole letter, because it's like almost 2 pages worth.
I'm just reading this paragraph that Batman on film.
Because I know he wrote a letter, and it was like a page and a half.
Okay, yeah, this is just a paragraph that. Okay. Those original 12 issues of Watchmen are Old Testament. When the New Testament came along, it did not erase what came before it. Creation, the Garden of Eden, Abraham and Isaac, the Flood, it all happened. And so it will be with Watchmen. The comedian died. Dan and Laurie fell in love. Ozymandias saved the world, and Dr. Manhattan left it just after blowing Rorschach to pieces in the bitter cold of Antarctica. To be clear, Watchmen is canon. We are not making a sequel either. This story will be set in the world its creators painstakingly built, but in the tradition of the work that inspired it, this new story must be original. Some of the characters will be unknown, new faces, new masks to cover them. I guess I'll just go ahead and start and say, first of all, in terms of the cast, I think I know 3 of the actors. I think I'm familiar with 3 of them. But the standout for me is Louis Gossett Jr., because he voiced Lucius Fox on The Batman, and he was amazing in that role. And you know how much I love The Batman. It's my favorite animated series. It's what made me a diehard Batman fan. So to see him returning to the DC Universe, I think that's awesome. He's great, Lucius Fox. I'm hoping he's great in this show as well. In terms of the sort of the premise of the show, in terms of that it's going to be new characters set in the world of Watchmen, I think that might be a brilliant way to go with this, because to me, there was already an amazing live action. They already brought Watchmen to life amazingly in live action. That was in 2009. So I'm not sure that I needed to see that get done again in the form of a TV show. I mean, sure, I would have watched it and probably enjoyed it, but I mean, we've already gotten that. Now, I had a feeling when the show was announced that maybe they'd adapt the Before Watchmen comics. Looks like that's not what they're going, because I did think that was a pretty good possibility and something that would work. But I think this is really cool to sort of set something in this world, but with new characters. I'm very excited. I think this could be a really cool approach to take with it.
Yeah, for me, again, I'm one of the ones that loved the 2009 film. And to do just another straight-up adaptation would kind of be sort of a disservice. And I think doing a straight-up adaptation would be you're damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario, right? with before Watchmen, it was an angle that I thought they might pursue as well, Jordan. But this, I think, isn't this way to go about it. I think it's a fresh take, and I think a very interesting way to go about it. It sounds like there'll be a make, because I've read past, you know, interviews and stuff. And it sounds like there'll be a mix of characters we're familiar with, and then these new characters as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I can't wait to see more, hear more, and eventually watch it. Joshua, what do you think?
I'm apprehensive. I'm a little confused about the concept too, because they're like, okay, like what they're saying, all this stuff happened. I'm like, okay, so it's the same continuity after, but then they say it's not a sequel. So like, I'm hearing a lot of buzzwords here, you know, like, okay, it's in the same thing, but it's not a sequel. It's like, well, what you're describing is a sequel. So, but I guess like you can't say Watchmen sequel, 'cause then otherwise, you know, there's an uproar. So I don't know. It's, I know that DC has been more keen to revisit the Watchmen world in the last years with stuff like Before Watchmen and Doomsday Clock. I'll see how it goes when they pull it off, but
yeah,
I'm not sure a Watchmen series is needed.
The reason I think they're saying it's not a sequel, the way I'm sort of looking at this, because yeah, it does sound like it's set after the events of Watchmen. The original,
which would inherently series, by nature, but make it a sort of sequel.
But right? I understand why they're saying, like, I think it's a sequel more in the vein of it, like a sequel sort of implies that it features the same characters that starred in the original or some of them. Whereas what I think this means is that it's going to be a sequel in the sense that Split is a sequel to Unbreakable. Does that mean it's set in the same world, but it doesn't really, it's its own thing. Do you see what I'm saying?
But that would work if this was like Star Wars or something. But if you take the world of Watchmen and you remove like the superheroes from it, like what makes it different than any other show at that point?
Well, I suppose they'll explore. I mean, here's what makes it different from any other show. It's a world in which we've seen a giant monster fall on top of New York. Or if they go the other route. I mean, yeah. But I mean, it's a world where that's happened. So I mean, that inherently sets up for some interesting story opportunities where you see the aftermath of a world that's suffered through that, I suppose.
I guess. I mean, we'll see what they do.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm willing to give it a shot, and then you know, we'll see what happens.
This was the same question I was going to ask you guys about the Pennyworth series, because I don't have Epix and I also don't have HBO. Will I be able to buy these like single episodes on like Amazon Video or something, or will I actually have to get Epix or HBO?
I don't know how the Amazon stuff works with HBO shows, but
HBO Go is on like Hulu and stuff like that, I think.
Yeah, so maybe through that you might be able to get it, but
okay.
But
I'm sure there'll be some way to get it, and if not, the internet provides for those who
exactly
who wants.
If they don't allow you to see it, there's ways around that, which I will not endorse. And or specify, find it yourself.
I never would have thought when I was in high school that, like, you know, in the year 2018, there'd be a show about Superman's great grandfather. Yeah, Superman's great grandfather and like Batman's butler.
It is his grandfather.
Oh, sorry, it is his grandfather. That's right. Sorry, it is. Yeah, sorry. Okay. His great grandfather's on the show though as well. So you're getting the whole freaking.
Well, only for one episode.
No, more.
No, his great great grandfather is on for more. His great grandfather died in the
fire. Oh, right. Oh, damn it! I need to freaking. See, you need an ancestry.com cheat sheet with this show. It's like, this guy here.
We got shows about, like, Superman going generations back. We got a show about Batman's butler. I mean, like, it's...
We are truly in a golden age of superhero TV.
We're spoiled. Remember the days where it was I guess, Lois and Clark, and that was it?
I remember watching Birds of Prey in high school, and man,
I still enjoy that show.
This is not anything like it should be in the comics, but, like, it's a live action Batman show, and I need to support it. Like, you know, because like this is the best we're gonna get.
I enjoyed it for what it was. You know, I'm not gonna hide that fact. I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, I love that show too. That was a good show.
But yeah, we're spoiled.
Yeah, and when like Smallville had to avoid like superhero stuff in its early years, before they were really able to like embrace it in the later years, like they kind of had to be like Dawson's Creek with like, you know, 10 minutes Clark doing super stuff at the end to a villain for a while.
Yeah, and then the shackles came off, and they're like, okay, you can.
Yeah, that was the Superman show those last few years. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think season 5 through 10 was more Superman.
I would say season 8 to 10.
Yeah, once 8 to 10, definitely.
Oh, 8 to 10 for sure. Yeah, but 5 they started to take the shackles off slowly.
I love season 5 and season 4. Yeah. I like a lot of the Smallville seasons.
You're with me on season 4? Yes.
Oh yeah, I like a lot of the Smallville seasons that all the people hated.
I'm not a fan of 4, but
Season 4 is one of my favorites, dude, but Adam doesn't like it, so I need somebody here to back me up.
I don't want to get you guys too off track, but one thing about season 4 that I bring up that like drives me crazy is, you know, it ends with Jason Teague, you know, before he goes to Supernatural, he has the Kents at like, you know, gunpoint, and then the meteor falls on the house, and then at the beginning of season 5, they dig up the house, and there's the Kents. Where's Jason? There's no body, there's no like, and he's like, aside from a newspaper article, he's like never mentioned again until like a flashback to like Lex's childhood in like season 7 or something.
Dean Winchester picked him up and it just
off. Yeah, it's like no one's like
Jason Todd too.
Sam Winchester. I made a mistake there. It was Sam Winchester who picked him up.
But yeah,
he went on to play Jason Todd too.
He did. So he
came back to the DC universe.
Yeah,
he likes being DCU Jasons.
Hey, he auditioned. He auditioned for Clark.
Yeah.
Side note, but yeah, it's not a small episode. You know,
It is funny, Josh, that he played two Jason T's in the DC universe.
Hey, so I'm gonna mention this now because I might forget it when we talk about Gotham season 4, but. Did you notice what the Gotham season 4 finale and the Smallville season 4 finale had in common?
What's that?
So in the Smallville season 4 finale, there's the scene where a kid's about to like get hit by a meteor and Clark saves the kid and shields him from the explosion. And they put that in the theme song for like a long time afterwards, too.
Yeah.
Gordon does the same thing in the Gotham season 4 finale. Oh,
Totally right. Behind the car. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I joked on our episode that it was a Ford Focus. That's how it was able to shield them. But like,
yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
Was that intentional? Do you think?
I doubt it. I doubt it was intentional. But like, if it was, that would be the next season of Gotham just opens up with like Ben McKenzie shielding from the explosion. Somebody save me. Like,
or you see a red and blue streak just flash across the screen. At the opening of the episode, Gordon's like, what the hell was that?
The red blue blur. I'll catch that Roadrunner one day.
Oh my goodness.
Alright, so let's get into the last piece of news that'll get us into Gotham.
Well, there's two pieces of Gotham news. But yes, this will take us straight into Gotham. First of all, and this news broke just after we recorded our last episode, or else we would have talked about it on that. But as soon as we recorded our last episode, then this dropped right after. So we missed it. But here we're talking about it now, which is that in addition to, of course, adapting No Man's Land, which we saw the beginning of in the episode titled No Man's Land, which was the season 4 finale, Gotham season 5 is also going to feature Zero Year. Which, here's the quote from John Stevens, there's going to be a little bit of Zero Year in there, you know, as well, Stevens said. You know some of that stuff, especially with I'm reading this with the wrong tone. You know some of that stuff, especially with Nigma. Or no, wait, I'm still reading that with the wrong tone. You know some of that stuff, especially with Nigma. They didn't put the comma in the right place in this article.
Well, it's comicbook.com. And what do you expect?
It's IGN. You're right. The interview, I'm reading this on IGN, but you're right. The interview was comicbook.com.
Case in point.
And there's another one, but if I tell you what it is, it really does spoil the story. So it sounds like there's another story that they're taking heavily from, too, in addition to this, but he doesn't want to reveal what that is yet. So I'm very curious what that is. In terms of Zero Year, I'm not a big fan of Zero Year in the comics, to be honest. I felt it was unnecessary. Like, Year One's such a perfect origin that I felt it was unnecessary to do Zero Year, and I didn't find it to be that compelling of a story. I thought it was okay. I just didn't love it. But, I mean, obviously Gotham's not going to take, like, going to do a straight-up adaptation of it. We know that. I mean, they put a twist on everything. And it would be impossible for them to do a straight-up adaptation anyway. I mean, just by the nature of what, I mean, of the point the show is at right now. So, but if they do something along, like, taking the, like, I think the premise of Zero Year, there's a lot of cool things in it. So if they take certain really cool things from it and do their own spin, maybe I'll like it even better than I did in the comics. And so anyway, I'm eager to see what they do with it. Yeah. Oh, and I could see, the other thing I'll say is I could really see, I mean, there's elements of Zero Year and No Man's Land. There's similarities between those two stories. So I can see how those would mesh well together in terms of them both being stories that Gotham is taking inspiration from in season 5.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down for it. I mean, I enjoyed Zero Year in the comics. If I had to recommend an origin story for people to read, Year One would be my default, but I still enjoyed Zero Year for what it was. So them doing an adaptation, given the fact, especially what a central character Enigma / Riddler has been in Gotham, makes sense. I'm up for it. Joshua, what do you think?
It's funny that you mention saying that you thought that Year One was unnecessary, or Year One, wow. Year was unnecessary year. Yeah. Because of Year One. Scott Snyder actually had the same thought, because DC wanted him to do, like, Zero Year, and he said, no, I don't want to, you know, tread all over Year One. And like, DC, like, actually sat him down saying, well, Year One's already out of continuity because James Jr. is born in it, and if Batman's, you know, only been active for 5 years, then James Jr. will be 5 years old, so don't you see, you know, like, it's already been wiped out. They said, and if you don't do this story, we're going to get someone else to do it, so... Like, Scott okay. Snyder, like, well, fought for Year One, so...
I didn't know that. I appreciate Snyder doing that, because I feel like they could have taken the general idea, though. I mean, they could have still... I mean, I know even if there is that continuity error, I still feel like Year One, the general idea of it, you could have said was still canon,
and
so...
this is the point. And I'm still not 100% sure on what is and what isn't. Continuity.
Well, that's the problem, because at the beginning of the New 52, they said a lot of the classic stories would remain canon, and I was hoping that would be the case
they
in
lied.
Year One, and then, yeah, it wasn't. So, that's just my problem. Again, I don't think Zero Year is necessarily a bad story. It's just, I went into it with this thing, like, yeah, but I don't need to, it's like, compared to Year One, I don't think it's anywhere close to as great a story as that is, so it's like, It felt to me like it was unnecessarily removing a masterpiece, basically.
Yeah. To answer your question about what's in continuity, it's really vague now because of Rebirth. But, like, the idea from the Rebirth one-shot is, like, Wally West remembers everything from, like, pre-Flashpoint continuity. And he gets Barry to unlock those memories, too. And that there was, like, basically, like, 10 years of their lives that were stolen. So that there was, like, a 5-year timeline instead of a 10-year timeline, and people have been regaining those memories back. So I guess pre-Flashpoint stuff is in continuity. People just don't remember it. And maybe that has something to do with, you know, what's going on with Batman and Catwoman arguing. It was the boat, it was the street.
Yeah.
Sure. So yeah, maybe so that the first 5 years are, let's say, I guess it would help if they released like an official, okay, here's like a timeline, but I would assume that New 52 stuff happened. Well, I don't really know. New 52
well,
happened
it's,
first, and then somewhere in between there is the 10 years they lost. Is that?
Well, and Superman changed history again, because when Superman, it gets complicated, but Superman was merged into two different people, and then, or unmerged, and then remerged. And it said that when that happened, there was a little, like, editor's note, but it said that, like, it changed the history of him and his friends around him. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, that explains some of the New 52, like, discrepancies, you know, like...
Yeah, so there's some holdovers from New 52.
Yeah, so that's how I kind of look at it, that, like, pre-Flashpoint is in continuity, but, like, it depends on what they try and do for the story. And it's funny, because, like, Tom King's Batman 44, like... everything was in continuity, you know, from like the Golden Age and on.
Taking the Morrison approach with Batman and Catwoman, and I think that's awesome. I want to ask you, Josh, are you team boat or team street?
I'm team boat because I like the idea of the Golden Age and everything on being in continuity. My thing is, why not both? Like, maybe Batman just didn't remember, didn't realize that was her in the street because of, you know, the outfit and stuff. Like,
I could say both. I could see that. Yeah.
I like the idea. I'm not sure I ever want them to answer it. Like, I like the idea that it's this endless debate. But, like, that's what I love so much about it, Batman Annual number 2, that they're still debating about it in their old age. Like, I think that's brilliant. But I am team boat also. And I'll tell you exactly why that is. It's because here's why I'm team boat. It's because the fact that Bruce used the diamond that Selina stole on the boat to propose to her. That's why I'm team boat.
Yeah, because, I still think it could be both.
Oh, well, sure. I'm saying I like the idea that they keep debating back and forth. Mm-hmm. But if I had to pick one, it's team boat because I thought that was so beautiful the way they brought that around and had Bruce, that, oh my goodness, the proposal where he says, I knew I'd need it just like I need you. And so that made me team boat.
And that shows that it's in continuity year one again, because they're referencing the street. In terms of adapting the zero year, it's
a good point.
You know, sometimes these things get taken out of context. Like, a few months ago, there was headlines all over the place. Gotham is adapting the Long Halloween. And no, they didn't adapt the Long Halloween. There was just a scene of all the villains, like, you know, at a dinner table together. I think sometimes, and Dustin brought this up when we recorded our season finale thing, that, like, John Stevens or one of the other producers will make an offhand comment that, like, they're doing something inspired by one of the stories. And the, you know, sites like comicbook.com and CBR and, like, you know, and a few others, and will say, oh, they're adapting this story directly. And then even Scott Snyder, like, tweeted, I'm so excited that they're doing Zero Year. It's like, I don't know if they're doing Zero Year. They might do one or two things inspired by Zero Year, but it's like, now, but granted, they've also surprised me too, because they did do their own version of The Court of Owls, and I have to say that the One Bad Day episode that they did, that was, like, a very, very close retelling of The Killing Joke without the nudity. It was, like, Killing Joke.
Best episode of the entire series, by the way.
I think I agree. I honestly think I agree. So, yeah, so it's...
It would be pretty hard for it not to gain that distinction, given that it had three of the greatest live-action Bat-Cat scenes ever in one episode.
Mm-hmm. That's all it takes for it to be Jordan's favorite.
It's kind of true.
Yeah, so I think that they'll take some elements from Zero Year, but I don't think that it's going to... Because also, Zero Year does deal with Bruce Wayne becoming Batman as well, and if Bruce is going to become Batman next season, so there's... I mean, they're going to mine different stuff too, but I don't think it's going to be the Riddler making a giant blackout. But I could be wrong. We'll see. But my first reaction when I saw this all over the headlines was to roll my eyes, like, okay, you guys should have learned your lesson after Long Halloween. Come on, comic book websites, you know, like, calm yourselves down and see what happens.
Yeah. I think, like you said, I think they'll take bits and pieces, but
sure. Yeah, I mean,
it's not going to be a full on, straight up, you know, here.
And then our final bit of Gotham news, I guess. Are we ready to move on to that before we?
Yeah, I'm good. Let's go. Let's see if as long as Joshua doesn't have anything more to say on Zero Year, we're good. Yeah.
All right. Oh, my bad, Josh. You were saying something.
Hey, I was saying let's do it. Let's do it.
Oh, okay. Cool.
We're ready to talk about mustaches again. Oh, boy. I don't know where that's going to lead. I have bad memories. Bad memories.
Oh, my goodness. Our final piece of news is that Gordon is going to grow out his mustache for season 5 of Gotham. And John Stevens said Ben is growing his facial hair as we speak. And Marina Baccarin even posted a picture of her and Ben, and I guess their daughter, and I don't know who the woman next to them is.
I think it was Marina Baccarin's mom on Mother's Day.
Yeah, but he's got a full beard, or like a goatee beardish kind of thing.
Yeah, he's got a full beard going in that picture. So I think this is very exciting. Obviously, we saw him with a thin mustache in that vision sequence.
Which was a fake, but and a painful, well,
yeah.
Obviously one.
Yeah, but anyway, I thought that was really cool when we saw it earlier this season. But now to know that he's actually going to be growing it out, and then we're going to see him, presumably, I don't know whether he'll have it all. Well, I guess if he's growing it already and they're going to start filming with him with the mustache, I guess there's a good chance he's going to have it all season next year. So I think that's awesome. You know, it's so iconic to Gordon's character, the mustache. So I feel like I feel like it'll be really cool for the show to wrap up with him having it. So it's like that one more step to him becoming, I mean, not that it's inherent to him being Gordon, but like it, I mean, obviously,
it's just Neil, nice to Neil, see as a, yeah.
Neil Hamilton didn't have it, but it's something that, you know, it feels like a big step towards him like being in his full form, being Commissioner Gordon. So that, I think that's cool.
Yeah, I'm happy to see that he'll have it, and I'm just glad that it won't be a digital mustache or because I'm sure Gotham doesn't have a $25 million budget or for that.
Yeah, the Henry Cavill mustache.
yeah, that was just let's. What's your take on the mustache, Joshua?
Oh man, it's just another sign that we're heading towards the finish line here. You know, maybe when you're in no man's land and there's like, you know, very little electricity, except for those bombs, which, you know, Lucius Fox thought was a good idea to bring into the JJBD. Like, it's I guess you don't have as much time to shave, not as many reflective surfaces. So
makes sense.
You know,
there is that mirror in the locker room that Edward Nygma always saw hallucinations in.
Yeah, the locker room that Gordon lives in sometimes. It's canon. I'm not making that up.
Okay, give us a homeless cop. Now, you're on the show, so you got to give us one.
The homeless cop.
I love it.
Yeah, he. It's going to be very, very weird for me to get used to Ben McKenzie with a mustache. Like, because on the one hand, yes, I want Gordon to have a mustache, absolutely. But on the other hand, it's like, oh, he's not – will he still look like our dear Ben McKenzie Gordon? You know, it's like that, like, you know, little boy in me that's, like, that's afraid of change.
Yeah.
Well, he has pretty drastically changed his haircut since season one.
He has, and, like, it's funny because, like, I didn't even notice it at first. But, like, when I go back and I watch the old episodes, like, I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, because He barely had any hair there, and the idea was that he had just come from the army or something, so that was why.
Yeah. So
it'll be – and it's funny because Bruce, like, said that line to him about the mustache, and he kind of, like, was like, hey, yeah, right. But, like, I guess a year later, he's like, maybe I will. And I did see pictures of him at the Deadpool 2 premiere with Marina McCarran, and, like – he's I took it as he's growing his hair out for his like summer break, because when he's not filming, he can do whatever he wants with his facial hair, you know, like I don't gotta shave. I'm not filming any Gordon stuff today, but maybe he'll come back with a full beard, like, you know, like people do, you know, during post-apocalyptic stuff. Like
that line when Bruce said that to him, and the way he responded, it reminded me of on Smallville when Clark wore a cape and Thirst to the Halloween party, and he was talking about how he doesn't like capes. And then also, it reminded me of the scene in Arrow in season one where somebody suggested the name Green Arrow to Oliver, and he didn't like that name.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be an interesting to watch play out. I'm looking forward to it.
Mustache watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Just have him like slowly grow it, you know, over the course of like the season. I mean, I guess he's growing it in between filming, and I'm not sure when they're going to come back to film too, because if they're not coming back till February, does that mean that they're not going to film until later on in like the fall or something?
I think I heard that their filming schedule, they're keeping their filming schedule relatively the same.
Okay.
I heard.
Okay, because if they're keeping it relatively the same, then that means that they'll start filming again around the beginning of July, because that's usually end of June, beginning of July is when the cast gets back together. And I do know that the writers did go back to the writers' room like a week or two ago, so that makes sense that they're keeping it up like that.
Yeah. Yeah,
cool.
I can't wait for season 5, but at the same time, I don't want it to come too fast because I don't want the show to be over. So it's
so bittersweet, dude.
It's a double edged sword. It's a double edged sword.
I blame football so badly.
Yeah. So we're I'm now anti. You know, I used to watch. Yeah. I'm in Canada, so football really doesn't have any overly significance for me. But I used to watch just because it's all the time, pretty much Sunday nights. Right?
Yeah.
So, now because they're prematurely ending Gotham and they've canceled Lucifer, I'm done with football. That's it. I'm out.
If it's not the Smallville Crows or the Gotham Rogues, I don't care.
The kid who's done the conventions with us and has come on the show a few times, Ben, like, I texted him saying, you know, telling him what was happening. And when I said it was because of football, like, his text back was like, I never liked that sport, and now I hate it.
That's a good call. Good call. But yeah, so let's while we wait for season 5, let's get into discussing season 4.
Yes. Yes.
When Selena, you know, channels an ancient witch, and as she has an affair with her, you know, assistant football coach,
yeah,
and
yeah.
and Bruce goes to the caves and is told, you know, by Jeremiah that he has a destiny that he has to unlock.
Well, the
and
the funny thing is, the cave is probably the closest thing that could happen on Gotham.
I don't even think that Batcave set exists anymore. We have not seen that Batcave in years.
Well, I assume they'd bring it back.
When was the last time we saw it?
I think season 2.
Season 2?
Yeah, like, there's certain sets that they...
Wasn't it season 3? I could be wrong.
It's possible, but, like, I... That set was, like, a big deal in season 2, and they've not come back to it. But I know that, like, they have a limited number of sets that they, like, you know, and when they're done with one, they'll tear it down and, like, build another one.
That's
like,
why Gordon doesn't have a place anymore.
Yep, that's why Gordon doesn't have a place anymore, because they need to build a new Falcone mansion.
Yeah.
Which, like, which is funny, because now, like, yeah, Penguin and Butch were living in Gordon's old home, if you want to look at it that way, because, like, the old Falcone mansion is where they were squatting at the end.
Yeah, but I have to imagine that they rebuild that Batcave set.
They should. Yeah, it's just a waste that they're not using.
I mean,
it. You know,
becoming now. Batman, right?
There was an episode at the end of season 2 where, like, Lucius Fox, like, you know, like, leaves the Batcave. Like, we don't see the Batcave, but, like, the door to it opens and Lucius is like, "Hey guys, I've been down here for a few, you know, weeks solving your, like, encrypting your chip," whatever he was working on. I don't remember. I think he was, like, fixing the computer that Alfred destroyed at the beginning of the season or something. But it's like, man, you can't even show the Batcave. Like,
yeah. Well, the cool thing.
Speaking of which, Josh, weren't we supposed to find out what happened to Alan and Montoya this season? Speaking of people who have gone by the, speaking of things that have gone by the wayside, weren't we supposed to find out about that?
Supposedly. I asked, I think it was Danny, it wasn't John Stevens, it was Danny Cannon or Bruno Heller at New York Comic Con. They were sitting with Alexander Siddig, and I said, can we address at least, like, where they are, because it's bothered me that, like, you know, Gordon's always like, I need cops I can trust, I need cops who aren't corrupt, and it's like, Alan and Montoya, you know, like, they were on your side in season 1. They were like, yeah, let's take down, you know, the corruption and Falcone together. Yeah, we're gonna, you know, take down these people. And they just disappeared. Obviously, they ran out of real estate for the show to use the characters on, so the actors' contracts weren't renewed. But,
sure.
You know, just not even like a line, like, ever since Alan and Montoya transferred to Metropolis, or like, something, you know, something
yeah,
like
give
that.
Us
and
a line. Give us a line, Ellie. You're
I
right.
Mean,
Gotham
yeah,
has
like,
so many series regulars, so I understand why some fall by the wayside. But yeah, they should have.
So many fallen by the way. But, you know, at least, like, there's an explanation for why some of them are not on the show. Like, Barnes is not on the show because he's running around in a crazy costume somewhere. You know, like, Ivy's in hiding, like,
yeah, I mean,
the other right
there's falling by the wayside and disappearing, you know.
Yeah, Harvey Dent doesn't work at the GCPD, so, like, it makes sense that we're not gonna see him all the time. But, like, I don't know, if we want to know, like, how Barbara Keene's gonna, I guess, become, like, her comic book self, like, towards the end of the series, maybe her name Montoya just, like, walks up to her in the last episode, slaps her in the face and says, no, hits her with the newspaper. No, bad. Come with me now. Yes, ma'am. And like, you know, like, you think about what you've done.
Maybe.
So be Renee Montoya to bring her in.
Speaking
but
of
yeah, that,
oh, no, my bad. Go on.
Oh, no, I was saying, yeah, he said that we were supposed to, like, hear something out of Alan Montoya, but, like, he was kind of vague with his answer. But, yeah, that never happened.
Yeah, yeah, I was curious. I remember you saying, I think I heard it from you that they were supposed to address that, and then they never did, so I was curious whether you'd heard anything more about that. But I want to say, speaking of GCPD officers, I wanted to give a shout-out to my friend Amy Novondo, who plays one of the GCPD officers on the show. So there's one that Gordon can trust. I vouch for her. You could trust her.
is she the one that went to Dragon Con?
Yes. Yeah, she was at Dragon Con. That's where I met her, actually.
Oh, I could have met you at Dragon Con.
were you there last year?
Yeah, I was there in 2017. She did a Gotham panel.
Oh, nice. Yeah, she was on the Gotham panel. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I met.
I was there at that Gotham panel.
yeah, me too. Yeah. Well, who'd have thought?
I can't believe I didn't see you. Are you going to be there this year?
I might. It depends on finances and work and how busy I am. It's always rough when it's right after San Diego. But like this last every year, I would always tell myself I'm going to Dragon Con this year, and every year I never do. And like this last year, I told myself, screw it, I'm doing it. And I had a good time. I didn't tell anyone that I was going on purpose because I wanted to, like, troll Michael Bailey because I wore a mask and I showed up to his panels. And, like, I took off the mask in the middle of the panel to kind of, like, you know, surprise him and throw him off his game for a second. So
Michael Bailey, he's on Superman homepage, isn't he?
Yeah, he does he does a series of Superman podcasts, and he does one or two Batman podcasts. But, he and Jeffrey Taylor do a Superman show called From Crisis to Crisis.
Yeah, okay. I knew I recognized the name. Yeah.
Yeah, he has Fortress of Baileytude and stuff. Almost everyone who's podcasted has podcasted with someone that's podcasted with him at some point.
Yeah,
he's the Kevin Bacon. But yeah, okay, her, yeah. Yeah, Dawn and Jen keep on asking me, are you sure that wasn't Harper? I'm like, it wasn't Harper. Like,
no, she was in. I'll tell you what scene she's in if you want to. I know one scene in particular. I mean, I know one scene in particular that I know that she was in that I saw her in, which is in. It's in the Jeremiah interrogation room scene, which is amazing. That's something we could talk about. Such a cool nod of the Dark Knight, where we really got great performances out of David and Cameron, but Cameron Monaghan, not Vikendova. I feel like we always got to clarify that. Because we've got two cameras on the show. But yeah, she was in that scene. She was one of the cops that was looking at Jeremiah when he was in the cell there. If you look back to that scene, you can spot her there. Anyway, I thought I'd give her a shout out because she's awesome and she's on the show. What I was going to say was, I don't know what I was going to say. Can I go on a Batcat rant? Because I'd really like to.
Well, why don't we get specific into season four? And then you can go on your inevitable. Right.
It's a very Batcatty season for
it
at
was,
least
it
at
was
least
4B
at least 4B 4B
yes 4A I was so that okay or oh, maybe you're gonna give me my rant now. Oh my goodness.
All right, well, hold on a second. What I liked about this, some of the things that stuck out to me, and you get your thoughts on it. One of the things I really liked was how the season opened with you know the Penguin, you know, sort of controlling crime, if you will, I guess.
His crime licenses.
Yeah, yeah, the crime licenses angle. That was cool. Very ingenious, in my opinion. And it kind of reminded me very much of how Penguin is in the comic books, or how we've seen him portrayed in the comic books. You know, and the idea that you know, we had the, you know, the little touch of the Iceberg Lounge, you know, really is a nod that I appreciated.
With a Riddler centerpiece at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that was very...
Frozen in carbonite.
he was doing his Han Solo impression. Just like that aspect of it, and I thought that was a really great way to start the season and have that be a driving force for a little bit of 4A, I guess, as we call it.
One Penguin scene that really stood out to me was the scene with him towards the end of the season on the blimp. When he, this just cracked me up so much, when he's talking to Gordon on the phone, and he's like, I don't know how to drive a blimp. I don't even drive my own car.
Yeah.
Robin Lord Taylor is always amazing.
He's great. He's a great iteration of the Penguin for sure. And I also like the aspect of we see the beginnings of Bruce sort of developing his vigilante alter ego.
I'm sorry, guys. I know a lot of people don't. I love the suit he was wearing at the beginning of the season. I think it reminds me of a mix of Clark's two proto-Superman blur costumes on Smallville, where it's all black, but it's got sort of that leather thing that Clark's second blur costume had. I thought that suit looked... I thought it was awesome for a proto-Batman suit.
He's the black-blue blur.
Yeah, because he turns the criminals black and blue.
That works.
But
that
yeah, totally we'll works. Just we'll go with it. But I'm not gonna call him that beyond this episode.
Chris Chalk liked that name when I suggested it to him.
Oh no, it's good. It's just, yeah, it works.
I had to come clean. I said I just stole that from Smallville, man.
That's funny. But yeah, so seeing you know Bruce that scene where he's on the rooftop and Alfred is kind of talking him through things was very reminiscent. It did give me a Batman Begins vibe.
And Selina got a mask at the beginning of the season too.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. They both sort of got costumes identical.
Was that all in the premiere? Was it where there was the scene? I can't remember which episode, but it was the boat where.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alfred and Bruce are doing that, you know, ruse where they're pretending to be other people.
Yeah. Again,
it's sort of a callback to like the Matches Malone kind of identity that Bruce adopts in the comics, right? Which I really like. And then we obviously see Selina in her. In her proto Catwoman kind of,
which was awesome. Outfit.
I did not like that mask.
You did?
That mask did not work for me.
Oh, I dug it. I dug it.
And it's like, why does she need to wear a mask anyway? It's obviously Selina. Like, who's she trying to fool?
Well, I mean, come on. Let's be honest. It's superheroes. Somebody. If you Fair can't enough. See past Superman, if Clark Kent's glasses, if that fools you. Then that mask is gonna fool somebody.
Fair enough.
There are certain things you gotta let go and just you know, sort of.
But in terms of the aesthetic look of the mask, I thought it was cool personally.
But you know those early aspects of 4A really sort of hooked me because I liked seeing that and I'm you know it's you sort of seeing it's. The beginnings of the Batman and Catwoman personas and all that.
And we finally got, for the first time in the show, we got some of the sort of the Bat iconography with Bruce in that vision when he's actually talking to like this Batman silhouette.
Well, let's save that for when we get there, for sure. But because I do want to, I think there's something that I think is the case, but I don't want to, I don't want to go there yet. But what did you guys think of? We got to talk about it a little bit. The whole introduction of Ra's al Ghul and, you know, the storyline with the Blade and how all that played out.
So I know let's, Josh. Let's go with Joshua.
What do you think of the Ra's al Ghul aspect?
I hate to start with the negative stuff, but...
No, I shouldn't have led you there. I should have said, what did you like
that,
for...
Yeah. I thought that Ra's was wasted this season, unfortunately.
I would agree with you, actually.
Yeah, I like Alexander Siddig, and I'm always going to have a soft spot for him as an actor because of... the interview that we had at San Diego right before the season started where like he was just awesome and he was like playing with our intern and stuff and like someone put a video of that on YouTube and it's like hilarious.
I haven't seen the video. I heard the interview on your podcast and that was a great interview.
Oh yeah, he like pops video. His like hand out. Yeah, if you look up Alexander Siddig and like I think Junior Reporter on like YouTube, there's like him and Ben like messing around in the video. I was like, oh, and he remembered that in New York Comic Con when like I met him again. But yeah, he's, I think he does a great like portrayal of Ra's al Ghul. The problem is like the show wasted a lot of time of him and fighting with Barbara Keene, and also he was off the table for like way too long. You know, he, Ra's al Ghul is a very threatening presence, and he was in like the first few episodes, and then he's just gone, and then he's like back for like another few episodes, and then they kill him again, and it's like, I was hoping that he'd be around for season five, you know, and help, you know, kind of like mess with Bruce a little more. But yeah, I guess that's not happening.
Well, he's Ra's. I feel like, I mean, we've got Lazarus Pitts. I feel like he's not.
We do, but with 13 episodes to go. But yeah, like,
and
you know,
look at how many people they're announcing that they're bringing in. Where are they going to fit him?
Yeah.
And the thing that this show sometimes does is it hires people to be season regulars, but then they don't wind up like using them. Like Harvey Dent, Nicholas DeGosta, or whatever you pronounce his name, he was hired as a season regular for season two after doing guest spots in season one.
Yeah.
So his name was in the credits, whether he was in the episode or not, which means he was paid for like the season. They did the same thing with Sadiq here, where like he was. His name was always in the credits for the episode, whether he was in it or not. So well,
that's
like,
the thing they've got. Like I was talking about earlier, they've got so many. I'm not sure I've ever seen a show with this many series regulars before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Absolutely. At New York Comic Con, when they like brought them all out, it was like nine people. And they were like,
two tables.
Has there ever been a show like that has this many people on it? Like someone like Estes regulars. Yeah. And
there was 14 series regulars total this season.
Wow.
Crazy. It's crazy.
14. Let me see if I can count. So Gordon, Bullock, Lucius.
Yes.
I'm thinking of everyone that's at the GCPD. Gordon, Bullock, and Lucius, those are the main GCPD people, because Harper and Alvin, they're not regulars. Okay, so then over the Narrows, it's Nygma, Lee, and Grundy.
Yep.
Then we got the three Sirens. So that's nine so far. And then Bruce and Alfred makes 11.
11.
And then Ra's is 12. And was Crystal Reed a series regular, or was she a guest star? Yeah, so she's 13.
Yep. No, 14. Who are you missing? You're missing Penguin.
I am. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, 14.
Yeah.
14, wow. I mean, and that's not counting, like, people who, like, you know, like, Zaz, who aren't series regulars, but, like, they might as well be because they appeared more than the series regulars, like, did.
In terms of a casting thing, I was going to ask you about, Josh, because I thought you might have some information about this. What was going on with Firefly getting recast and then them bringing back the original actress again?
So Firefly was like, the original actress was not available from what I remember reading something about that. She was doing something else. Okay. So they had somebody like fill in because Bridget, you know, like her face is covered most of the time anyway.
Yeah, you can't really tell.
Although like, that being said, I think she's cured of like whatever happened, because I remember in season two the deal was like she could not remember being Bridget. She thought she was like this Greek god, but like she seemed to remember like being Bridget and like her past life in this episode. And I remember like Strange was like saying that like it was impossible for her to remember that before. So I was like, okay, I guess she off low key got her memories back. but yeah, like Ra's, it's just off the table for way too long. And if you had my co-host on here, Donovan and Jan, they would be a lot more venomous because they're a lot angrier about
we'll
the bar.
Get them on here at some point just to have that.
Yeah, they're a lot angrier about what happened with Ra's. We're like, I'm more low key. I'm like, oh, that was weird, but you know, I'm not too mad.
Yeah, here's the thing. I agree with you that he was criminally underused. And I think that he had the tools to really sort of make that character his own. And you could see it in his performance when he was on screen. There just wasn't enough of it. What was your take on the whole, because I know this was a hot button issue with some fans, so I want to ask specifically about it. The knife and Bruce being the one that had to stab him. What was your, because Bruce is essentially killing him. So what's your, and you know, Batman, you know, the whole Batman doesn't kill thing.
Right. I don't mind that because, like, number one, we knew he was going to come back. It's Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially because he was, like, a series regular. I was like, okay, he's... Yeah, we'll see him again. It's, So I don't mind Bruce killing, especially because this is, like, a teenage Bruce, and, you know, he'll learn his lesson. And there's versions of Batman that have killed, including, like, canon comics.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
the early years of Batman.
And he felt bad about it. I thought the knife thing was weird. The whole, yeah. I don't understand, like, it's the only way he can die. Like, what if he was in a guillotine and, like, his head got chopped off? Like, would that not kill him? Or would he, like, Deadpool, like, grow a new body? Because when I'm hearing only this knife can kill me, it's like, well, what if you were at the heart of a nuclear explosion? What if this? What if that? But it's a comic book show. We're not supposed to ask these questions, you know? Like, just sit back and enjoy the ride, you know?
Throw rationale out the window. It's all right. We don't need it.
That being said, I was very, very amused by how they resolved that. I thought that was kind of, like, hilarious. Like, Barbara, like, grabbing Bruce's hand. Yeah. And I love how even as Ra's is dying, he kind of, like, gives Barbara a look like, respect! Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Well done, explain that loophole.
And to me, the whole, you know, people getting up in arms over it, I look at it this way. He's done it, like you said, in certain comics and in every movie, he's killed in one way, shape, or form. Except for the 1966 movie, but, I mean, that's a totally different ballgame.
He didn't kill anybody in Batman and Robin.
Actually,
not in Batman and Robin.
No, it killed me, though, so there's that.
Technically, he killed in the Batman 66 movie because those people who... were like rehydrated or something. When you touch them, they like disintegrated.
You're kind of right.
Good point. So there you go. I mean, so there's that.
I mean, it's not the same as like stabbing someone in cold blood.
Sure.
Like I'm not gonna pretend that it is. Because someone listening is gonna be like, you can't pretend that's the same thing. You know, those people were gonna die anyway.
But what I'll say, the point you made was, I think, very, very appropriate in that. This is a teenage Bruce Wayne, and so to me, if that experience down the line causes Bruce to come to the conclusion of, I can't kill, this is not the way to go about things, then I'm cool. If that life experience leads him to that mantra, to that rule, then I'm good. Then I've got zero issues.
Only issue, I wouldn't have had an issue with it. I did take a little bit of issue with it. I don't think it's for the reason a lot of people took an issue with it, though. The reason I took an issue with it is because literally last season we got that amazing scene where he vowed not to kill. And that scene just gave me chills last season when he told Alfred that. And so it's like, to me, it just felt, if he hadn't had that scene yet, I wouldn't have had a problem with it, but for me, it felt like
that's a good point. But again, the other point to it is,
but there was consequences. So.
Right, there was consequences, and you saw the reaction that it caused him to have, where he abandoned being proto Batman, you know, for.
And when Ra's came back, is that he was so creepy when he came back at first with that weird. Thing going on.
They did something similar in the comics not too long ago with that aspect. I can't remember the story. I wish I did so that I could reference it and sound smart. But it's gone way way.
Resurrection of Ra's al Ghul.
Thank you. That's it. Yeah. So it reminded me a lot of that, which was cool when he came back. And then, since we're on the Ra's al Ghul event, I'll say that I was not a fan of Barbara becoming de facto demon's head.
That was so strange.
Yeah, there's a lot of things I don't buy with Barbara, and that's up there as one of the main ones.
I never thought that this character would have this happen to her.
Yeah, I would never thought half of the stuff that happened to her would happen to her. But here we are.
You see, I think, because I loved all of that stuff, and I think the reason for it, it is because I think that both Alexander Siddig and Aaron Richards, their performances as both those characters are so good that I'm just so entertained by that, that I feel like, yeah, there's some wonky stuff there, but I don't know, I found it entertaining, because it kept me on my feet the whole time with that storyline, just because it was so shocking, so I don't know, I enjoyed the hell out of it.
What I did kind of enjoy to a certain degree is when they brought in Sophia and that whole mob aspect of 4A, because to me one of the cool things of Gotham is the mix of villainy that we have, in the sense that you have, you know, the gang, the mafia kind of thing, and then you have the hyper crazy flamboyant, you know, supervillains, and it sort of mirrors, you know, the Batman comic books in that way, and it's very true to that.
Well, I love the escalation idea that's played on in Batman Begins, right, where it's you go from having, you start out with, you know, villains like Falcone and like Maroni, and then you wind up getting into the, you know, the freaks, and it's played on in The Long Halloween too. It's played on in The Long Halloween, actually. Yeah, with you know, Falcone being skeptical, like he doesn't like the idea of these, you know, these costume freaks running around terrorizing, right, Gotham.
Yeah.
And I like that too, because it felt like a return. We got a lot of that mob stuff in season one, and to me it felt like a little bit of a return to that, with having Sophia show up and sort of filling the role that her father played in season one. And I thought Crystal Reed was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought she was fantastic. I really liked her performance, and I liked the fact that she sort of was,
played everyone.
What's that?
She played everyone.
Yeah, and as a viewer, yeah. I was never sure. Right. I was never sure what her mode, like, she always kept me on my toes, like trying to figure out, you know, whose side was she really on and who she was playing. It was great.
Yeah, and the whole thing too was the fact that they kept that angle of, you know, it was at Falcone, sort of, she was sort of in keeping with Falcone's original wishes, in that what she wanted to do was sort of get crime under control and get rid of the quote-unquote the freaks, right? And so that was her whole angle. So I thought it was, again, even though Gotham goes its own way, it's still very in keeping with what we've come to know in the comic book. But again, I can't stress how good her performance was. She was one of the standouts for me in her time on Gotham, for sure. What did you guys think? One of the other aspects I wanted to... I mean, sorry, Joshua, anything else you want to add about Falcone
I think that was one of the best parts of season four. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really enjoyed how that played out. I mean, my initial thought is like, Gordon, this is really inappropriate. This is your ex-fiance sister-in-law, and like and you killed her brother. And I was bothered too that, like, you know, why are you jumping in bed with the guy that killed your brother, Sophia? But then, like, it all ties together that, oh, she's doing it to control him and get revenge. And when you go back to the pilot of Gotham, and one of the reasons why that pilot was so good is at the end of it, Gordon is in this impossible situation. Does he shoot Penguin and basically, you know, break his rules, become corrupt, or does he let Penguin live and, you know, he becomes the target of the mob and he's in trouble, Barbara's in trouble, and he's going to, you know, die if he doesn't kill Penguin. So he finds a way out of it, but in that way out of it, he's in this lie. And throughout season one, that lie unravels more and more.
Sure.
And I felt like this was another version of that, where by the end of season 4A, Gordon is in this impossible situation. Like, Sophia lays it out for him, and it's brilliant. She says, yeah, like, if you take me down, then I am going to tell everyone that, you know, you brought me, ergo bringing Pig into the city. Then you're going to lose this captain position. You finally got the Gotham Police Department to get behind you. Well, you're going to lose all that support. They're going to bring someone new in there. That person's going to be controlled by the mob. And everything that you worked for will be for nothing. All those cops that died will be for nothing. You losing your friendship with Bullock will be for nothing. So you can lose all of that and be honest, or your other choice is say nothing and live with the guilt and live with knowing what you did. And I was like, oh, man. Like, and it took me back to the pilot where Gordon is in one of these impossible situations.
Yeah, that's a great callback. I didn't put two and two together, but now that you...
I didn't think about the parallel there either, but you're totally right. And I do want to touch on, you brought up Professor Pig, and I want to touch on Professor Pig. Because to me, I've long thought he's one of the most underrated Batman villains. Now, my thoughts on Grant Morrison's Batman run are well documented. I'm not a big fan of it overall, but Professor Pig's one of the things that I truly love from it. I think he's an amazing character. I loved him on the Beware the Batman animated series, and I loved Michael Cerveris' performance on Gotham. I thought he was so creepy. The scene where he snaps, where Gordon gets him to snap and he reveals his true accent or whatever and who he really is, I thought that scene literally gave me chills, because what it reminded me of was Edward Norton in the film Primal Fear. That's what it reminded me of. And oh my goodness, that was amazing. I just thought, like, seeing, and again, this is one of the things that I think Gotham does so well and that I appreciate the show for so much, is bringing all these villains to live action who I wasn't sure when I was ever going to see in that medium. Because it's like, what is the likelihood? Now, I love it. But what is the likelihood Professor Pig is going to be the villain of a live-action Batman movie anytime soon? Not very likely.
Yeah.
So it's like the fact that they are able to give me like several episodes, probably more than a movie's worth of time with him in live action, portrayed that well. I mean, oh my goodness, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll come out and say it. I don't really care for Professor Pig as a character in the comics. I think he's not on my list of anywhere close to being one of my favorites, but I will give credit to the performance and the episode he was in. It was creepy. It was very disturbing. Especially the scene where he gets them to eat the pies.
That was one of the best episodes of the season, and one of the most like gripping sequences too, where like I was horrified, I was disgusted, and like it was, Gotham does horror really well, and I feel like when they embrace the horror, like in, you know, the One Bad Day episode and stuff, that's when they really do well, when they're able to shock you, disgust you, horrify you, and like, you know, push the boundaries, like things like fish ripping out her own eyeball, even though they reverse that like almost immediately afterwards. But that scene, you know, Sophia's hand getting stabbed, and then people being forced to eat it, and like that's probably my second favorite episode of the season.
Mm-hmm. That whole episode, but yeah, particularly that sequence with Professor Pig. I mean, just. And I don't know if either of you guys, have you guys seen the film Primal Fear before that I was referencing?
I have not.
I haven't either. Yeah.
Oh, man. Check out that movie. Edward Norton is amazing in that movie. And I think maybe you'll see the connection there between him in that movie and Professor Pig in that scene with Gordon.
Interesting. But no, so for me, the fact that they were able to take a villain that I don't particularly like and make him interesting and, you know, creepy and disturbing and all those things, I think is kudos to everybody involved.
You say you don't like him in the comics. Did you like him on Beware the Batman?
No.
Oh. Well,
Gotham is the only place where I was able to be like, all right, I dig what they're doing with him. So, again, that's something that I wanted to give them credit for straight away. Another thing I want to give them credit for, and I thought was done very, very well, is Solomon Grundy and going there and the way they went about it, and even
poor Butch
Drew Powell's performance I thought was great. Let's speak to that if you will, because I never thought we'd get, that's another character that I sat around and said, all right, well, we're never going to see this guy in live action.
We sort of did on Arrow.
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, come on, it's,
well, it sort of kind of was.
You can call him by that name and all, but it's not. To me, that's not right.
And we got him on Smallville actually too.
Did we? I've forgotten so much of Smallville.
We did.
Yeah, he was only a cameo, but yeah, he was in season 10 when they had the table sitting around with Toy Man's group of villains.
Oh my god, you count everything. You can, I mean, somebody can say that, to me that doesn't count. I need to see something with a little bit of meat on the bone.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. I agree that he was awesome on Gotham, and teaming him up with Riddler at the beginning when he first showed up, that was hilarious. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was an interesting dynamic for sure.
Because it was like Riddler at that point had lost his intelligence. Yeah. And so I thought, which, by the way, I just realized that there's a parallel between him and Harry Wells on The Flash in that regard.
Yeah, kind of.
But that just, I didn't think about that at the time, but yeah, that occurs to me now. But yeah, that I thought their dynamic was just so much fun to watch. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, no, it was great. And just, like, no matter who he was paired with, whether it be Riddler or Penguin, you know, they would always use him, right? And then I really sort of felt bad when, you know, I actually enjoyed him and Tabitha's relationship, and his final scenes were heartbreaking because he got what he wanted. He was cured.
That's what you were talking about, Josh. Where I think it was Robin Lord Taylor said you were going to hate Penguin at the end of the season. We found out why that was, huh?
Yeah. Well, and I thought that they were going to go in a different direction. I thought maybe he was going to trick, like Butch into basically going full Grundy, so that Penguin can have his own, like, brute to control. And then he was going to make Butch kill Tabitha for, like, you know, as revenge on both of them. Because then Butch has to live with the fact that he killed his girlfriend. And then, you know, Tabitha, you know, is dead, finally as revenge for Penguin's mom. But they went in a direction that I wasn't, that I did not see coming for that. But my spidey senses were tingling in those final scenes. I was like,
You were fairly... You even, it wasn't exactly what you thought it was going to be, but you were fairly close, I would say, in your prediction. I mean, it was
right. Well, I mean, in fairness, I didn't, you know, come up with it all by myself. Like, it's going by what Robin Lord Taylor says about hating Penguin and then just knowing that he's deceptive. And then someone on Reddit had, like, a similar theory. And once I read that, I was like, yeah, that it all clicked for me.
Further, I don't hate Penguin after that. I think it was a great villainous move for him. I wouldn't say that I hate him. I think it was like a very, very satisfying, not satisfying. Yeah, I guess as a villainous move, it was like, oh man, that was cold.
Well, we are supposed to hate the villain to a degree, right?
Yeah.
It works.
I don't hate Penguin either. I'm not sure I hate any of the villains on the show. Yeah. If Donovan and Jam were on here, they'd say, well, we hate Barbara, but like...
a different kind of hate, more.
Yeah.
It's not the hate that they want to generate. I didn't say that.
Yeah, when it comes to villains, there's two kinds of hate. You can think they're like not an interesting villain or whatever, and you could hate them because they bore you, or you can hate them because they're such an evil villain.
They're ruining the lives of our heroes.
Yeah. But I would say that I'm not sure I hate Oswald in either way quite yet. Like I wouldn't hate, because I love him as a villain, but like that scene didn't make me like. I wasn't super mad at him after that scene. I was just like, oh, man, that was cold.
I feel so bad for Butch. He was, like, led to a lamb to slaughter, you know, like.
And it was such a great character arc for him. Because think about it. When he first, you know, when we first see him in season one, I thought, okay, this character's not going to last long. He's just going to be a throwaway kind of thing. And look what they did with him. And it worked. You know, going even right back to the surprise that he was going to be. He was going to become Solomon Grundy, all that stuff. It just really gelled for me. And I really enjoyed him and the way they handled Grundy and the whole story arc that he had. So he's going to be one that I definitely miss next season.
I'm not sure this is the end of him. I think that there's a chance that he winds up coming back, but this time he's Grundy permanently.
Well, the way he was talking, it sounds like he's...
Yeah, they could... I was also thinking when he died, like, just drop him in Slaughter Slump again, you know, like, you'll be fine. But this felt like a definitive ending. Then again, so have other things. But this not only felt like an ending, like, Drew Powell was interviewed by, like, Variety, and he, it seems like he's done with the show.
Pretty much says he's done.
I think he'll be done as a series regular. I'm just saying that I think there's a chance they wind up bringing characters back for like one episode and just so that Grundy is still around when Batman is around. So like I think there's a chance that like he winds up becoming Grundy, like he goes into Slaughter Swamp like you were saying, becomes Grundy again, But this time it's for good. Like, he can't revert back to Butch, so he's just Grundy permanently.
I mean, Drew Pal can get a call tomorrow from the producer saying, hey, you know, get, we need you in makeup in, like, 6 weeks, you know, for the premiere. I thought Butch was dead. Oh, he is, but you're going to be his, like, you know, cousin, you know, who also looks like him or something.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
We had Butch's cousin or nephew, like, in season two, I think.
Yeah, we did? Yes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, Sonny Gilzean. Go on a Batcat rant because it was Bruce and Selena taking him on together.
It was when Bruce and Selena were street rat roommates.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Bruce wrote that letter to Alfred, like, I'm running away from home to be homeless with my girlfriend. this is a good idea. Don't try and stop me.
I love that period of time so much.
Of course you do.
Can I go my Batcat rant?
Not yet. We're gonna get there. Hold on a second. I'm running. I do have some semblance of an order here that I'm trying to get through things.
Do you look like a guy with a plan?
Oh yeah, I do actually. If you could see me, you can see me right now. I have all this written down. One of the things I want to get your thoughts on. I guess it goes twofold, but let's go with it. I want to talk about Lee's arc this season as well as Riddler's. What do we all think of that? Judging by that reaction, I don't know if that's a good thing or bad. But go ahead, Joshua. Tell us what you give us your thoughts.
I miss the old Lee. Like when she first came on Gotham, she was the anti, like, you know, TV girlfriend, where, like, you know, she wasn't like, oh, Gordon, why are you always out solving crimes? Why can't you, you know, have a normal job like a banker? Like,
yeah, she was the anti-Barbara, basically.
Yeah, and she wasn't, like, you know, jealous, like, oh, Gordon, you know, like, you're trying to, like, stop, like, and no offense to Smallville, because I love Smallville, but, like, she was everything that, like, Lana Lang in the early seasons wasn't. She
wasn't. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Like, she, there wasn't, like, you know, random hate. Yeah, there wasn't random jealousies or anything like that. And again, I love Smallville, but let's be real, like Lana, yeah, Lana was very, very trigger happy with, like, jealousy. You were kissing Clark. You were kissing. Like, I don't mind spending every day out on the
one of these days I'm gonna get somebody on the podcast to back me up about Lana and how great a character she was.
Tonight's episode of Gotham featured music by Maroon 5 and Lifehouse.
unless you can get Kristen Kreuk herself on here, I don't think you're going to find anybody that helps your cause.
Allison Mack might be available now.
Well, that's a late night podcast. Ooh, super late.
Yeah,
night.
Like, you visit her at the penitentiary. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so anyway, Lee, yeah, like, she was just a breath of fresh air. She's like, no, Jim, I'm not jealous over you and Barbara. I just think that it's dangerous for you to walk into her trap and get killed. And, like, he wasn't, like, keeping secrets from her. Like, you know, like, they had, like, an understanding, and then now she's another supervillain. Like, it's
they don't know what to do with her, to be honest with you.
Well, I loved at the beginning of the season when they had her finally open up her clinic.
Yes.
Yeah, that was fun. Then, yeah.
Then after that, listen, I'm going to be the one person here. I actually really enjoyed what they did with her throughout the rest of the season, but at the same time, it did still have me like, well, are we ever going to get back to the clinic? Like, I'm just like, I'm very confused with what their plan is with the character now. But I've got to say, I've enjoyed the ride. It's just not the ride I was expecting to get on. So,
I love her as an actress, and she's been great in the role. It's just having her go all these directions to me signals that they have, like, no idea what to do with her, and then. You know, I go to watch Deadpool 2, and I'm like, damn, I love this woman. You know, not in a creepy sort of stalkerish way. But it's just the direction was – she was just all over the place. And it's just – I agree with Joshua at this point for her.
If her name was Mary Carter, it would be different. But this is, like, Leslie Tompkins, and Leslie Tompkins. Like, if Marina McCann was playing a character named Mary Parker – who happened to, like, you know, open up this, you know, be the Queen of the Narrows and have sex with Edward Nygma, maybe I wouldn't mind it as much. Yeah. But it's
then everybody would speculate that she was really Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Well, they still do that with like with Leslie.
Barbara.
Like,
with Barbara, they do it for sure.
Well, Barbara, like, I've seen them do it for I've seen them do that for every character. It's ridiculous.
Everybody's
like,
Harley Quinn, and then eventually
everyone is Harley Quinn.
Even Alfred. Alfred next season is going to turn into. Yeah.
But yeah. Lee, she like I said in the
Harley.
Oh God! Stop that! You're going to contribute to the madness.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, well, like, this one's for Jordan. Like, apparently, Marina McCarron wants to play a live-action Selena Kyle one day,
and someone on
yes, I saw that.
I'm
yeah,
and that.
Someone on Reddit said, "Of course, it makes sense." Selena, it's been in front of our faces the whole time.
honestly, guys, I was going to bring that up. I'd be so okay with that.
Me too.
Like if they announce tomorrow, she's Selena Kyle. I'm like, yeah, all right.
She's got the look.
She wouldn't be one of my first choices. There's actresses I'd like to see in the role more, but I think she would be good. Like I would be
like,
down.
Like my thing is, can I buy my ticket now or next week? Like when can I buy my ticket for that?
Yeah.
So I love
and
her as an actress.
She's
so.
Like. She's a big. I don't know if you saw the story she told when she was doing that interview. She's like a big Catwoman fan too.
Right.
Like she told this story about she used to have a cat suit in high school, I think.
Oh my gosh.
I'd like to see photos of that. somebody send them over. DMZ,
Ken McKenzie's got them.
That's one thing. Like she clearly has a passion for the character.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's something that I think. I mean. That's one thing that I think is really important for an actor. Like, I think it's really cool if an actor actually like is really passionate about a character that they're playing. So that would be.
It's really frustrating for me that they've gone down this road with her because she's so good. And don't get me wrong, she gives a good performance in what they have her do.
Well, they did the clinic. They did the clinic.
Yeah, but
they did the clinic,
it.
And then they never went back to it.
Agreed,
I was starting to come around to her a little bit towards the end because I do kind of like that she was like at least addressing like. You know, this is who I am now. You know, you're never going to get the old me back. I almost felt like she was breaking the fourth wall to talk to me. And I like how she, you know, kept on, like, having the guy second guess her. Like, you know, you both think that you know me, but you don't. But Lee Tompkins robbing banks and, you know, breaking out of prison.
They have to get her. You know, to wrap this up, I'd love to see them somehow bring back the clinic and get her to that place.
I think they will. I think there's a good chance they will.
And enough people get hurt on
I'm
Gotham.
I'm very curious to see what Hugo Strange is going to try and do to her and Ed.
Switch their brains.
Oh.
That would be, hilarious.
That would be a funny episode for sure.
That would be interesting. I always love. I was just because I was doing my Smallville season 4 rewatch because we're going to be talking about that on the show soon. And the episode Transference.
God help me.
Where Clark. And Lionel switched brains. It's so much fun. So Gotham did an episode like that with Lee and Ed. Oh,
have you ever heard the commentary for that episode that they did on the DVD?
I have not. I've heard that Tom Welling would watch John Glover act out the scenes first, and then he'd try and emulate what John Glover did. But no, was there something on that else on the commentary with that?
I think like John Glover, it's been a long time since I've heard that commentary because I had the season 4 DVDs. I still have it somewhere probably in storage, but like John Glover talks about like the scene where like Lana like goes to Clark like you can't tell anyone about me and Jace, and like Clark like rolls his eyes like I think John Glover says the last thing that Lionel Luther cares about is some teenage romance drama.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, no, that was good, and I did enjoy it. That's one of the episodes I did enjoy from season 4. The spoilers for when we get there. But
it's a great episode.
But so that's my take on Lee, and I actually like what they did with. I love where they went with Ed because you're now really getting sort of, we're getting into like full on Riddler territory. And
Corey Michael Smith has delivered the sort of cold, intelligent, calculated Riddler that I've always wanted to see in live action, and has just we haven't gotten it up until now, and he's finally given it to us. And yeah, they do some more goofy, zany stuff with him, but ultimately, like he's a threat to be reckoned with. And I love Corey Michael Smith's performance.
Yeah, I would agree with you that he's the best live action Riddler in my opinion.
You reign. Portion over
yeah,
him
but
on
our, at that point we hadn't test. Seen full blown Riddler. That's what I'm. Remember, I said.
I feel like he was throwing a Riddler last year. You know, like.
Well, yeah, he started, but I think this year he's really gone more into the full. Like, he's gone even more down that path.
So that episode where he was hosting, like, the, I don't even know what to call it, like, the
Riddle Time.
Yeah, Riddle Time.
That's what it was called, yeah. I love that. I was like, oh my goodness, this is so much fun.
Which relationship do you think is more inappropriate? Lee and Enigma or Gordon and Sophia?
That's,
oh man, because Enigma did kill Kristen Kringle, who was Lee's friend. And I would say
And framed Jim for murder while they were engaged.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I would still say I think Gordon and Sophia, though, probably.
Yeah, I'm still going to go there.
I mean, he shot her brother, so, like,
and,
I mean.
Yeah, that's an awkward Thanksgiving dinner.
I can't say that I blame him. I will say that.
Oh, my goodness.
And then there's the incestuous tones because you were engaged to her sister-in-law, like, at one point, too.
Yeah,
so.
It's very genuine.
Yeah, that's true.
But that being said, Lee and Enigma, pretty inappropriate. Like,
Neither is really a great foundation for any relationship.
You know what a great relationship is on the show, though?
Wait, we're not there yet.
I tried.
Try all you want. Jordan's in his cage, and like
Jordan's
he's ready
like
for you to like lift
like
the door.
Are we there yet? What I want to talk about, because I think we need to, I think it was, is the once again, the recasting of Poison Ivy. In the form of
In the form of Smallville alum Peyton List.
Lucy Lane, right?
Yes.
Lucy Lane, sir. Yeah. And she was also Golden Glider on The Flash as well.
Yeah. So what do we all think of her performance and her episodes?
I wish I could go back in time and tell myself not to pick Mag Yeha on our best Poison Ivy picks on our ideal Batman fan casting.
Our mind changes, so it's okay to change your mind.
Well, it's not that my mind changes, it's that we hadn't seen Peyton List yet. Right. So it's not that my mind changes, that we hadn't seen her performance yet. But no, I loved Maggie Gyllenhaal too, because I thought she was so funny. But Peyton List, oh my goodness, she's terrifying as Poison Ivy. Like, she's finally brought this, like, and again, I'm actually somebody who likes, I like Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy. I really liked Maggie Gyllenhaal's Poison Ivy. I liked Claire Foley, but I almost don't want to count her because she wasn't really full on Poison Ivy at all. But Peyton List is the best. She, oh my goodness, she was scary. She was, I mean, she just had, it was like Poison Ivy leaped off the comic book page. Like, the way she carried herself, she was amazing, I thought. And I loved her. One other thing I loved was her interactions with Selina. And how Selina felt, like, when Ivy brought Selina to go kill that guy or whatever, and I loved seeing Selina. I'm going to reiterate again, Selina is a hero, period. And I like that Selina, it's very clear here that she had a serious issue with what Ivy was doing, and she felt
guilty. She wanted to make it right.
Yeah, and she even came to Bruce about it. And it's like, I loved that. And so I loved Ivy's interactions with Selina. I loved everything about Ivy that they did with her this season. It was great. And, oh, I got to mention another scene with Selina that involves Ivy. You see, I'm getting my Selina talk.
This is his backdoor way of getting Selina references in here.
But perhaps the funniest scene of the entire season was when Gordon and Selina were... You see where I'm going with this.
Oh, you know what? No, never mind. When you said Gordon, I was like, oh, it's not the one I'm thinking. I thought you were going to do the commercial that I watched.
You know, that was hilarious, too. You'll like it. It's nice. It's like... Oh, my goodness. That was hilarious. But this, I think, was even a little bit funnier, was with Gordon and Selina, where they're trying to pretend like they're under Ivy's mind control. And Selina has this line, oh my goodness, I was dying laughing.
I love Ivy so much.
I wish I could be her. Yeah, I saw her.
You're not really selling it. Yeah. And you think you did?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Was that not hilarious?
That was good, yeah. No, but I like her again, like what Jordan was saying, her whole performance, she just exuded the attitude and the mannerisms that we've come to expect from reading Poison Ivy and the animated series and all that. So I think that was a great casting decision. And I loved every episode that she was in. I thought every episode she was in was good. And it leads to the dream sequence, which will, or the hallucination, which we'll touch on in a bit, because I want to delve into that more deeper. But so I gotta give them props for that casting choice and those episodes, because I really enjoyed them. Joshua, is there anything more you want to add specifically about Poison Ivy?
Yeah, absolutely. Third time's a charm.
Because, for sure.
Like, I really mean it. Like, they got it right, because I've had issues with, like, every single other iteration of Poison Ivy. I hate to say this, because Claire Foley is a human being, you know, who has feelings and emotions, but I did not like her in the role. I did not find the performance very convincing. And she was a series regular in season one, like everyone else, but, like, they never knew what to do with her. Like, she couldn't sell me on the performance. The scene where, like, Selena finds her in season one in the alley, she's like, I'm just cold is all. I was like, I'm not buying this delivery at all. And then in Maggie Gia, I thought it was disgusting. The whole, like, you know, she's still, like, 13 or 14 years old, but she's in the body of an adult, and she's in these adult sexual situations. So it's like she's still a kid. So this is kind of, like, weird and creepy, which there's still that problem with Peyton List. But at this point, like, you know, she's been not a kid for long enough that I'm kind of over it a little bit, even though, like, it's always in the back of my head.
Yeah, because she, at least the way Peyton plays it, she seems more mature, where the other two played up the I'm still a child.
Maggie Gia was playing it up as if she was a child, and it just wasn't working for me, and I didn't like. But then, like, towards the end of season three and the beginning of season four, they kind of found a spot for Maggie Gia as, like, the comedy relief. And I was saying at the beginning of season four, you know, this is not Poison Ivy. This is nothing like Poison Ivy, but I love this now because she's hilarious. Yeah. I love her.
Right. That's what I was saying. She was so funny.
Yeah, I love her banter with Penguin. Like, she's nothing like Poison Ivy, but I love her banter. And then when I heard that they were recasting again, I was like, oh my gosh, Gotham, this is ridiculous. Make up your mind. And they're like, well, we wanted a fuller Poison Ivy something, and it's like, you can't keep on doing this. But then when I saw that episode, I was sold. I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, this was definitely worth recasting again, because Maggie Gia was great for the role that they put her in. She was great as comedic Poison Ivy, but Peyton List plays an in control Poison Ivy, a Poison Ivy that walks into the room and has, like, the body language where she's sure of herself, as opposed to being this goofy girl in the body of, like, a grown woman. Like, she is in command of every situation. She exudes sexuality, and, like, she is just in control of people. Like, I loved it.
And the effect when she would scratch people was disgusting. That was another gross out moment when she infected.
I was sitting there thinking, you can scratch me anytime, lady. Get right on.
Well, and by the way, Josh, just so you know, Claire Foley was not a series regular in season one. Maggie Gyllenhaal was in season three, though.
I'm pretty sure that Claire Foley was. Are you sure?
Yeah, because I was thinking that she wasn't, so I double checked for you. Yeah, she wasn't in season one.
Okay, she was in all the promotion, though. Like, because when they did those, like, subway cars with all the cast members, like, she was one of them. But yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah, not too important. I just figured I just wanted to point that out.
Kind of important. So yeah, no, it's a good point to make. It's Peyton List. She was. I wish that they would have had a scene of her at the end of the season where all the villains are taking over the territory, taking over Robinson Park, just like Poison Ivy did in No Man's Land in the comics. That would have been awesome.
We might still get that. Like, I know we got several. I love that villain montage, by the way, at the end of the season. That was amazing.
Me too. Me too, with the exception of Barbara.
We could
I wish Barbara would go away, but sadly, it looks like we're going
to...
We could still get
Poison Ivy. I have a weird relationship with Barbara, so I don't want her to go away, but I want her to not be doing the things she's doing.
Yeah, okay.
You don't want all that research you did to go to waste.
That's fair. I'll say that's fair. But so, like, to me, like I said, Peyton List, if you know, down the road, let's say the DC Universe streaming service were to do a live action straight up Batman show, I could see her slipping into Poison Ivy and I could just roll with it 100%. In fact, my plea to the DC streaming service is just to, once Fox ends their run of Gotham, just pick it up and go full-blown Batman and put it on the streaming service. That's
what I was about to say. I hope
that's easy money.
I hope we either get that or we get basically what Serenity was for Firefly. I want them to do for Gotham and give us a movie.
So you're like, okay, but that would have to be on the streaming service because I don't see Warner Brothers putting that.
Well, they've got the Elseworlds banner.
Well, what I think that they'll probably do, not right away, but I think a few years after Gotham ends, we might get one of those DC original animated movies set in the Gotham continuity you can use the voice actors, like have Cameron Bea Kendova voice an animated Catwoman, Davi Mazzella voice an animated Batman, Ben McKenzie animate, like, and do like a Batman story set in the Gotham universe. I think that would be a fun thing.
I could see that.
Yeah. I think you would have to wait a few years after the show ends to kind of like give it some breathing room.
Yeah.
You know, but sure. that would be cool. I would. So, in fact, man, you know what? I mean, Jordan's about to have a heart attack with what I'm about to tell him. They should do that now for Smallville. Like, you know, enough time.
Yes. That's something. Cause I don't know if you saw the news.
Jordan, you're getting a little too excited by the sound of your grunting there. I don't know how that's.
I mean, with the money that they make from it, Allison Mack can pay her legal bills.
I don't know if you saw this news, but Michael Rosenbaum actually talked to Al Goff about that. And he basically, Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling were at a panel at AwesomeCon recently, and they said that both of them said they'd be open to that.
An animated thing, specifically?
An animated reunion, yeah.
Let's do it. Do it.
Ooh!
Do it. Nothing's confirmed, but they said they'd do it, so do it.
Ooh!
Warner Brothers, get your butts in gear and do it. But, all right, Jordan, look, it's time.
You're about to set me loose?
But, now, this is the way I want it to play out.
Uh-huh.
Calm yourself when you get to the finale talk because I want to loop that all in with the Jerome Bruce angle. So
release the Jordan.
So
I can go all the way through One Bad Day?
Correct.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited. Okay.
Let's go. Just go right into it. You should
release the Jordan.
This should all be ready. This should all be, you know.
I was about to try and segue into it again because Josh said Selena and Bruce's names back to back, and I was about to bring it up, like, hey, you know.
All right, I let you off the leash. Go, because.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
There's only so much time in the park before I got to bring you in again.
Well,
the bystanders.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, Bruce and Selena. Okay, first of all, the first half of the season, like I said, I loved 4A.
Yeah.
But my biggest criticism with 4A was that Bruce and Selena were not together for it. And I was so bummed when they broke up last season. And it was like 4A, we barely got any scenes of the two of them even together. And it was so frustrating for me. And I was like, oh, man, we better get so much of them in 4B. And Gotham delivered. Okay, first of all, I loved seeing them sort of get back together, like sort of them, yeah, basically them getting back together over the course of 4B. Like, one thing that really stands out to me is the Bruce. First of all, there are a few things in the world that I like better than a Bat-Cat fight scene. Okay, my favorite Batman fight scene in live action ever is the Bat-Cat rooftop fight scene from The Dark Knight Rises. And we got an amazing Bruce and Selina fight scene this season in 4B where it was the scene where Selina caressed Bruce's face and then they started kicking ass together. And oh my goodness, I love that scene. I loved Selina coming to see Bruce for his birthday. I thought that was such a sweet scene. And like, yeah, she said she didn't know it was his birthday, but you damn well know she knew it was his birthday.
She knew.
And oh my goodness, I love that so much. But then they kept giving me these fake outs where I thought I was going to give a back cat kiss. And they kept, oh my goodness, I almost threw my computer on the ground when they were about
Ross.
To and Ray showed up. Yes. Man. Oh my goodness. I was furious. You have no idea how mad I was.
Joshua, I was laughing that whole time because I could just imagine what Jordan's reaction was. So when I was watching it, that's the first thing that came to mind, and I started laughing.
Oh my goodness! I was.
Oh, Bruce leans over and opens the car door.
His grief regarding Batman and Catwoman brings me joy. So I'll just throw it, you know.
You're a sadistic human being.
Yeah, that's true.
I wanted to take that knife and stab Ra's in that scene. I was so mad. But they kept giving me these fake outs. Then there was the one in Bruce's proto Batmobile, which, by the way, first of all, the car was amazing. I love that. I've always loved Batmobiles.
I will say,
yeah. I've always loved Batmobiles that have more of a sports car look. Like, my favorite Batmobile ever is the one from Batman the Telltale series, which literally is a black sports car. So I loved that, and seeing Bruce and Selina driving around Gotham together was amazing. It reminds me of the Everyone Loves Ivy arc from Tom King's run, where we got to see them driving around in the Batmobile through Gotham together, where obviously Gotham was totally deserted in that arc because Ivy had everybody under her mind control. And anyway, that scene reminded me of that, and it was so great. But anyway, there was the scene in the car where I thought Bruce and Selina were about to kiss, and he leans in, and then he opens the car door, and I'm like, what are you doing, Bruce? Oh, my goodness. I was mad. I was very mad. I was like, Bruce, you – oh, my goodness. I was so angry. And then there was the one which, first of all, was amazing. They replicated the Batman Returns scene where Catwoman was on top of Batman and Batman Returns. This time it was the other way around, and it was great. And they were on the ground, and I thought they were going to kiss. And then Selina pushed Bruce off of her. And I was like, oh, my goodness. First of all, it was amazing, though, that they replicated that scene, but I was so – furious. I was just like, oh my goodness, you're killing me here. You're killing me, Gotham. And then we get to the masterpiece that is 421, One Bad Day.
All right, so we picked that up there.
Wait. You said I could go through One Bad Day. I could talk about One Bad Day.
All right, yeah, okay, because then we can.
You said I couldn't talk about No Man's
Land. Here's what we do. Why don't you let Joshua and myself talk about Selina and Bruce up until that point, and then we'll get back.
He's gonna get blue balls.
Then we can, hey, suck it up. And then we'll so hold off there. Keep that in mind. And go Google pictures of Batcat or whatever the hell you want to do over there in the corner.
Okay.
But Joshua, what do you think of the whole how Bruce and Selina's relationship played out this?
Any scene that Davi Mizales and Cameron Bikendova share is like an awesome scene because these two have so much chemistry. And, you know, once Bruce kind of got over himself in 4B, it was actually interesting that like Selina was spending more time with Bruce than she was with the Sirens, you know, whenever we would almost always see them together, and I loved it. Like the scene where they're driving the car together, I thought that it was just Bruce like showing off his car to Selina. I'm like, oh, cool, they're hanging out like teenagers. But it turned out they were meeting Tabitha, which was like, oh, okay. But, you know, I liked, you know, them coming to each other for proms, like her wanting to help return that stolen item and I don't know what to do, you know, like is saying sorry enough. It was. They have good chemistry together. It's the actors. They've and from season one, I've felt that way. They just Gotham really, really, really lucked out with this combination because if it was any other actor or actress, it might not work as well. You know, because you could have a good Catwoman, you could have a good Batman, but if they can't sell you on their chemistry together, then it just doesn't work. And we were very, very, very lucky in 4B, you know, lots of scenes like them at the diner with Jerome and them, you know, return the stolen item, the birthday thing. And even when he was Bratty Bruce and her calling him on his shit, you know, like you fired Alpha. This isn't like you, you know, like you can come back when you're not being such a douchebag.
In that birthday scene, when she tells him, she's like, I knew it was an act the whole time. And he tells her, I think you're more sure of that than I am. But I love that because it all goes back to my whole thing. Bruce and Selina understand one another better than anyone. And I love that. And I'll talk about that more later. Once I can finally talk about One Bad Day, damn it. But go on.
See, I kind of, like I said, I think what makes it work, those two here, is you touched on it quite a bit in the sense that we've grown up with these two as these characters. So their interactions, they feel genuine. Like if the relationship feels genuine, the chemistry is there.
It adds so much, I think, to their relationship. I think it's brilliant what Gotham's done, having them know each other from such a young age.
It's an interesting take. And it works because of the two actors. And you know, here's an example. Like you mentioned, I don't want to beat up on her, but it's true. Claire Foley, right? You know, there's a difference between, you know, when you look at David Mazouz and Cameron Bikindova and then Claire Foley, you see a clear divide of good young child actors and not good at all young child actors. And that really shows you how lucky Gotham got, because it could have been a situation where you had somebody with the talent level of Claire Foley playing one of these two iconic characters, and then the show would have been in trouble. So their chemistry is incredible together. They really exude that relationship and what we've seen in past iterations, in comics, movies, etc. I did
I mean,
like.
I've said it before. David's my second favorite live action Bruce, and Cameron's my second favorite live action Selena. So not only are they amazing individually, but yeah, like you guys have been saying, their chemistry is just incredible.
I did like the. See, to me, the fact that they had their own separate storylines throughout the season, you know, in 4A, they were kind of separated and then came together in 4B. I think that, see, that to me, when they're separated and they have their own storyline and then they come together, it adds to the relationship, because it gives, when they do finally come together, it gives things more of a presence, more of a power, more of a meaning. So it really worked, that time apart really worked in its favor, as much as it tortured Jordan, and I gotta admit that did give me some delight. It really worked in the end in its favor. And just a question before we move on is, or to the next part. Do we all assume that he got the car back? Because remember, he left it out there, and then what's her name stole it, Barbara. So do we think he
No,
got?
she shot the tires.
Oh, but didn't she steal it at one point?
I don't remember her stealing
Yeah,
the car.
she.
I remember her shooting the tires so
Oh.
that she can get a head start.
Oh, I could have swore she
She.
took the actual car. I
Which like
think the.
I was expecting Alfred to like press a button like, oh, don't worry, Master B, Lucius Fox made this thing, and like the tires would like reinflate, but.
Because I think, yeah, she shot the tires and then she got into her own car.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay, all right. Well, that car better resurface, is what I'm saying, because I did enjoy it.
Alan and Montoya and Harvey Dent are currently driving it through the Batcave
Yeah,
sets.
maybe that would be a hilarious scene opening up season 5. So, Bruce, I heard you need your car in the elf shop. They drive right through the Batcave. Okay.
Batcave set that doesn't exist with the characters that don't exist.
Speaking of
Yeah.
the Batcave set,
Whoa, wait, can I talk about One Bad
one
Day?
more second. Hold on a second. I forgot this
You're
part.
having way too much fun.
I kind of am, but go with me on this. It's very important.
It's sadistic.
The hallucination of the future. You could kind of say we saw the Batcave.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's true.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great, because we didn't touch on it at all. I thought that was a great sequence
I
with,
touched on it earlier
yeah, but not really. You met
with Gordon's mustache.
you met, but you didn't talk about the Batman.
And I see, yeah, I
Ask,
mentioned
yeah,
the
but
bat
not
silhouette.
you didn't go into any
This
detail
is
about
where
it.
I was
Yeah,
born.
that whole stuff I thought was great. And whoever did the
Who was
voice, yeah,
voicing
who?
the silhouette?
Not
Because
sure.
they did a really good job, whoever it was.
It could have been Davi Mazouz in like a voice modulator.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Either way, I thought all that was great. I'm like, oh man, I'm loving this. I'm loving every second of this.
And Harvey with the chicken. I just want to point that out. What was up with Harvey with the chicken? Because it cracked me up.
I have no idea.
I think it's supposed to be like how dreams are nonsensical. But
That
it's
makes
funny
sense.
because like on Gotham Chronicle we had like a chicken watch because we were like trying to figure out like what's with the chickens, because like there was like random chickens in season one and we were like, what does it mean? Is there like something behind this? And then like
Well,
I
maybe
think
Popeyes
Falcone
has
did.
a sponsorship deal or something. I don't know.
Bruce isn't going to become Batman. They're going to have a twist and he becomes Chicken Man.
Yeah, the chicken like flies in. I must strike fear into the hearts of criminals. Like, and then the chicken bursts in
Yeah.
through. Of course, Alfred, get the feathers ready.
Oh, man.
Oh, my
This
goodness.
feather cape, that'd be funny.
Bruce, this isn't like you. Kid, what are you doing? I'm sorry, Selina, but I will always be a giant chicken. You wear a disguise to look like human guys, but you're not a bat, you're a chicken, man.
See, we're getting a sneak preview of the season 5 theme song. Right? All right, so now let's go into, because we have to delve into this to talk about one bad day. So we'll
be,
you're faking me out just like the show did.
We're going to see like a live death on a podcast.
It's cool. It'll be great. It'll be the highest rated podcast we've ever been. There are listeners that are enjoying this. And this is for you guys. No, but in all seriousness.
You're all terrible people.
We got to talk about the Cameron. How do you pronounce? Is it Cameron Monaghan?
Monaghan?
Okay. So you do pronounce the G.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. I pronounce it as Monaghan, but I could be wrong.
Okay, yeah, I think I've been pronouncing it wrong the whole time because I've been saying Monaghan.
You're definitely off course.
I've been pronouncing it Beacondova. Oh man, I'm really embarrassed now.
If you get another chance to interview, then you know, clear that up.
Yeah,
and clear up Monaghan as well. This is a guy, I'd love to know which way to pronounce it, but.
Well, no, he was joking. That's what you were joking, right, Josh? That you were pronouncing
Yeah, Monaghan? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I totally missed that. But no, yeah. So I'm just going to say Monaghan and everybody don't know who we're talking about.
By the way, do you know what he and Drew Powell have in common?
What's that?
They both were on Malcolm in the Middle.
Huh.
I was about to guess that, actually, because I knew Drew Powell was, but I didn't know if Cameron Monaghan was, too.
And they were both classmates of one of the brothers. Cameron was one of Dewey's classmates, and Drew was one of Francis's classmates.
Interesting, yeah.
Wow. I know him from the movie The Giver, which he was in with Katie Holmes, Rachel Dawes.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't want to wait.
Oh, boy. Dawson's Creek. Gotta love it. But...
I've never seen that show. It tells me I would love it.
You'd eat it up. It'd be great.
I guess it's like the first few seasons of Smallville, but without like the capes and like
without any Superman references at all.
There was no capes in Smallville anyway. But yeah, like without the freaks.
That's exactly what I was thinking because I was like, I know people make fun of Smallville for being Clark's Creek, but for me it was like, wait a minute, that's a great thing. That's one of the things I love the most about Smallville.
You need to go on Hulu or something.
I've only seen like one or two full episodes. I know that there's Dawson and Pacey, and like there's a love triangle between them and some girl.
I checked out when Pacey had sex with his teacher. I'm like, okay, this is unrealistic.
Wait, the Flash and Rachel Dawes were in it, right?
What Flash?
John Wesley Shipp.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You have to specify which Flash.
Because we have multiple ones now. And I know that and like Smallville, it does end in like a flash forward.
I remember that, yeah.
I remember hearing that, and that one of the characters in the flash forward like is making a Dawson's Creek movie or something.
Yeah. Yes.
Like,
yeah because his whole thing was he was a screenwriter, right? So, or aspiring.
How did we go from Malcolm in the Middle to Dawson's Creek?
I don't know. This podcast has been everywhere. But back to my point, Cameron Monaghan.
It was Katie Holmes. Yeah. Katie Holmes. That's how we got
there. Cameron Monaghan, which is now what I'm going to
Well, yeah, Cameron Monaghan, because then we talked about he was in a movie with Katie Holmes.
Yeah, you brought that up, so you derailed this podcast. Like is usually the case. But anyway.
Well, I brought up Malcolm in the Middle, so.
You just piled on to his derailing. this is like every train in every superhero movie just going off the tracks at this point. I think he's fantastic. I think he's great. He was great as Jerome. And I think he's phenomenal as Jeremiah. He's found a way to give nods to Jack Nicholson. And Heath Ledger, and at the same time, make the quote-unquote Joker role his own. His performance is phenomenal. He's insanely just... He makes you uneasy every time he's on screen. You have no idea what he's going to do. And he's one creepy-ass version of the Joker. And I don't care that Warner Brothers has a stupid edict that he can't have green hair and that he can't call himself the Joker. I'm calling him the Joker because I don't have those problems. And every episode he was in is a top. It's so hard for me to pick favorite episodes because to me, especially with Gotham, there are so many good ones. So I
can't, One Bad Day is the best.
I can't do what I do with Smallville where I go through picking episodes because I don't have episodes from this season with Smallville, I'm like, that's crap. I can point out which ones are crap. I know Jordan can because he has blinders on when Smallville's concerned. But with Gotham,
Fortune.
Which one?
Fortune. Yeah. That one was crap.
Yeah. But so he's phenomenal.
It was like The Hangover, but with superheroes.
Yeah, it was crap.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
I love that episode.
Three quarters it's in my of top season 20. Three quarters. I know you guys like it, but three quarters of season four for me were like, oh no. But yeah, Cameron Monaghan is doing. He's just something else. He's another sort of stroke of luck and genius on Gotham's part to find him because they've got three phenomenal younger actors playing the parts of Bruce Wayne, Selina Kyle, and who will become who or slash is the Joker. And that's again, I can't say enough of how much I love what he's doing. Jordan mentioned it, the scene where I guess we got to talk about what Jordan wants to talk about first. Before we do that, I just want to ask, what did you guys think of the revelation that with Jerome and Jeremiah and the fact that Jeremiah ultimately becomes, quote unquote, the Joker? So go ahead. Start with our guests. Go first.
This was kind of like Poison Ivy with me, where like when I first got an inkling this was happening, I like groaned like, oh, I don't know about this. But the thing that gave me faith was Davi Mazzal's before this happened. He said that like the twist in the Joker thing was going to be one of the most clever things that Gotham's ever done. So I was like, okay, so you're just going to kill Jerome and replace him with his twin brother. That's like, you know, like that's stupid. Just keep Jerome then. If you're just going to replace him with a twin brother, that's like Simpsons did that. They killed Fat Tony and replaced him with his twin brother. It was like, you know, but, you know, like why go to all the trouble? But then they actually did a good job of showing how Jeremiah was different from Jerome. Yeah. They each had like different aspects of the Joker's personality. Yeah. So it wasn't just killing Jerome and replacing him with another Jerome. And, I like that. They pulled it off. I like Jeremiah. He gave me, and I like how out of the gate they established that this isn't going to be Jerome the sequel. He throws Jerome's book into, you know, the grave saying these are Jerome's plans. They're stupid. I'm going to outdo them all. You know, that was great. And he made me laugh a few times. I miss the more manic energy that Jerome had because I feel like I want a Joker that's kind of manic too. But that's okay because, like, you know, we'll get that, I'm sure, as time goes on, too. And we got a little bit of that in the season finale, you know, and he made me laugh with the whole, like, I'd like to press charges against Bruce Wayne's butler.
Yeah.
Look what he did to me. So I didn't see this coming. And it's certainly not something that I would have ever come up with in a writer's room. So good job pulling it off.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me, and like I said, the performances are quite distinct, and that's a tough thing to do given that, you know, he spent so long playing this one iteration, and then just have to switch that up, and then there's the part where he had to do that dual performance because where he was the fake being drawn on the video, where he was
and that was a good twist that I didn't see coming because. even though we already knew that Jeremiah was evil and everything, they were still able to surprise us with that episode.
Yeah. Your podcast had to explain that twist to me because I did not understand what was going on when I watched the episode the first time. So thank you for helping me understand that.
You were too engrossed in your
the back half. Well, yeah. Donovan didn't understand it either. Like, Jan and I had to explain it to him.
I was glad, actually, that he didn't understand it because you're explaining it to him. And explained it to me as well. So,
And Jan sometimes has to explain things to both of us. We'll be like, "Why? Why did this person come out of the pool wet?" It's like, because the pool has water in it, guys. And pools get people wet. Like, Jan, like, has a way of explaining some stuff to us that like simplifies it so much that, like, oh yeah, why didn't we see that before? Yeah.
To I quote guess, Perry White, "Water, wet."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Jordan, what was your take on him, on all that, the fake out and everything?
Right now, I really just want to punch Jeremiah in the face repeatedly like Alfred did for what he did to Selena. So that's my overall take right now. But I guess that's a good thing because that's something you should want to do with the Joker. You should want him to be a villain. You want to punch in the face, but I'm very furious with him right now. But I love Cameron Manano's performance. I recently went back and watched his first appearance in what was that episode called in season one? The Blind Fortune.
Oh, that was
the
Blind Fortune
Teller. The Blind Fortune Teller. Yeah.
I rewatched his scene in not his first scene, but his scene when he snaps in with Gordon and Lee, and I was just reminded of how just phenomenal this guy's been from the start. Like, oh my goodness, he's amazing. I loved him as Jerome, and I thought that the Jeremiah twist was brilliant because it allowed the producers to stick to their word that no, he's not the Joker, but it still allowed us to get Cameron Monaghan as the Joker. So I thought that was brilliant. I love that he's giving us now, even though I loved his Jerome performance, I love that he's giving us a more calm, subdued Joker, because that's something that Tom King showed us in The War of Jokes and Riddles when he gave us something like that with the Joker. He showed us that a calm, subdued Joker can be just as terrifying as a more flamboyant, crazy Joker. So I really love that about Jeremiah, that he's giving us that kind of Joker, and he's terrifying. And that interrogation room scene, I mean, yeah, like we were talking about that.
We have to get to now. I'm going to give you the green light.
So I can talk about it?
Because we can get to that moment. Yeah, go.
Okay. So we got to talk about
this. You're right. This is fun. I get this more often.
Goodness. Adam, well, you know what? I'm not going to yell at you right now, Adam, because I'm just so happy I get to talk about it finally.
You can yell all you want. I'll just mute the microphone. That's all.
One bad day. 421 was a masterpiece. Like I said, I was waiting so long for this kind of Batcat stuff all season. I've been waiting for them to get back to the place that they were in season 3, and honestly, they've gotten to an even better place than they were in season 3. Like, they faked me out so many times this season, they infuriated me. I wanted to stab Ra's al Ghul for interrupting that kiss, and then we finally got One Bad Day, and oh my goodness, like I said earlier, I think I said it on the podcast already, there were three of the greatest live-action Batcat scenes ever in one episode. Like, how could that not be my favorite episode of the series? Okay, first of all, I love the scene where Selina tells Bruce, I'm gonna be here whenever you need me. Because that's just Selina, because Bruce is talking to her, he's like, oh, I'm sorry I had to call you out for this, and she's like, no, I've always got your back. Like, I love that she's always there for him, that she's always going to be there for him. And I love the parallel that I'll get to in a second that we get with Bruce saying the same thing to her. So I love that. And we see her later in this episode, leading to the second amazing Batcat scene, which is when she is there for him. And she, first of all, that Selina versus Scarecrow fight was amazing. Like, oh my goodness, it was so good. But seeing her rescue Bruce after Bruce thinks Alfred's dead, first of all, that was such a creepy scene when Alfred did the Joker smile on his face, but it wasn't really Alfred. And Selina, listen, I love this. I love this scene so freaking much. Oh my goodness, I was crying so much during the scene when she basically, Bruce thinks that Alfred is dead. He thinks Alfred's just been shot, and she just puts her hands on his face and looks in his eyes, and you see the love in Selina's eyes that she has for Bruce. You can see it in Cameron Beacondova's performance in that scene. It is phenomenal, and she just says, Bruce, breathe, look at me. And she's able to snap him out of Scarecrow's fear toxin. I've said it before, She has such a deep connection to Bruce. She has such an understanding of Bruce, and they have so much love for one another that she's able to snap him out of that. And I thought that was so beautiful and such a beautiful representation of the connection that Bruce and Selena have. And oh my goodness, I was crying during that scene. I was so happy. And little did I know what was coming later in that episode, because this sealed it for me. Oh my goodness. Even after all the fake out kisses that we got in all season, even after all of that, as soon as Alfred left the room, I knew it was happening, and I just started bawling tears of joy. Even though I've been faked out so many times, I let myself get excited for this, and I was like, it's finally happening, and I was so happy. And Bruce and Selena, they're there on the couch. Bruce, and first of all, we'd seen like a set photo earlier on of this shot with Selena with her legs on Bruce's lap. And I did not realize it was from an actual episode. I was hoping it was, but I wasn't sure.
Wallpaper, by the way, on your computer, isn't
it? It is not my wallpaper. One of them, my like lock screen on my computer, is the Bat-Cat kiss from Batman: The Enemy Within from episode 3. Mm-hmm. And then my wallpaper on the inside is Batman and Catwoman kissing on the cover of Batman number 50. So it is not actually that picture, but that would be a great one for me to put on there at some point, because oh my goodness, I love that picture so much. But it's basically, so anyway, I was hoping it was from an actual episode, and it was. And oh my goodness, I loved it. It was so great seeing them on the couch there together, and Bruce thanking Selena for basically saving him earlier and saying he didn't know what he would have done without her. Again, going back to the idea, Bruce needs Selena. He tells her that when he proposes to her in Batman number 24. He says, like I was talking about with the diamond earlier, he says, I knew I'd need it just like I need you. And we're seeing that here on Gotham in this episode, One Bad Day. And he leads in for the kiss, and nobody shows up to interrupt it this time. And oh my goodness, I was crying tears of joy. I was so happy. I literally was like on the verge of shrieking. I was so happy. I was like, I could not contain my happiness. I was so happy. And then after it, oh my goodness, she has that amazing line, why is he so obsessed with you? And I love that line, because it's like, it's Selena, again, she understands everything that's going on with Bruce, and she's realizing that something's not right with his dynamic with Jeremiah, and it's like, I love that she points that out. And then, very quickly, my tears of joy turn into tears of sadness, because this is why I said I wanted to punch Jeremiah in the face like Alfred does, because he came in and they replicated the Killing Joke scene, and I was furious. Now, I'm not furious in a way that, like, I mean, it's still my favorite episode of the whole series. Like, it doesn't take away from the amazing Bat-Cat scenes we got in this episode, but I was so sad. I was devastated. They're finally happy together. My OTP is finally back together on the show, and then that happens. But I love the scene at the hospital after that happens, when basically, again, it's like the parallel. Selena told Bruce, I'm going to be here whenever you need me. And then at the hospital, Selena says, please don't leave me. And Bruce says, I promise I'm going to be right here. And I love that so much. I know at the end, I was furious with Bruce at the end of the episode when he didn't stay with her. But I love that he sent Alfred, and I loved Bruce's line to Alfred when he said, I need to know she's going to be okay. And so that's why he sent Alfred. But I was furious. I was like, Bruce, go with your future wife. Get on that ambulance. Go with her. But I was furious that he didn't. But I know a lot of people are worried that maybe Selena's going to hold that against him later. Somebody pointed this out to me. I can't remember who it was, and I wish I could give credit to who it was. But somebody pointed out to me that back when Selena met Bruce's clone, and Bruce's clone tried to save Selena but didn't try to save everybody else, and Bruce's clone was talking about basically Selena told Bruce's clone, she's like, I know you're not Bruce because Bruce would try to save everybody. And so I think that Selena will understand in this situation that Bruce had to save Gotham, and that's why he didn't go with her. I was still furious with him, but I think she's going to understand. I'm expecting her to have a triumphant return in No Man's Land next season. I think we're going to get a scene where she's going to come and save Bruce at some point next season and have a triumphant return. My one complaint about No Man's Land, though, was that it didn't focus enough on the Bat-Cat relationship. I was really hoping, again, I can't remember who got this in my head, but somebody on Twitter, they got it in my head that they could replicate the hospital scene from Heart of Hush, where Bruce confesses his love to Selena in the hospital, I thought we were going to get, I got in my head that they were going to replicate that scene in No Man's Land, and they didn't, and I was bummed about that, and I was just bummed that we didn't get, I was really hoping that they would, like, exchange I love yous or something in No Man's Land. They didn't. I was mad they didn't focus as much on the Batcat relationship in that episode as I wanted to, but I just got to end on a positive note with this rant and say, one bad day, oh my goodness, this episode was, it was, as a Batcat shipper, I was in bat euphoria. Watching One Bad Day, seeing those three of the greatest live-action Batcat scenes ever. I couldn't have been happier, and that Batcat kiss that it ended on was magical. I'll just end by saying, as I always do, Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Nope, I gotta say it again because you interrupted me. Oh. Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last.
All right, you good now? You good? You got it under your system?
Yes, thank you, Adam. All
right. I love the episode because it was like, I think Joshua brought it up early on. You said it was as close to a literal adaptation of
Killing Joke as possible.
And I just thought it was, again, that had to be, I agree with Jordan in the fact that I think that could be the best episode of the series to date. It was just
no question about it. It is.
There's so many points in that episode where I was grabbing my face in horror, like, oh my gosh, and I did not know what was coming. Yeah.
And the fact that they had it, you know, they did what Joker did to Gordon with Bruce and Alfred. I thought was a clever twist on the material, and also
Selena was Barbara.
That was again. A clever twist, and the way they, but they still managed to work the essence of the comic book, and that's one thing I really appreciate about Gotham is that even though it goes its own way, and you know, does some wonky things, you know, with quote unquote continuity, if you can call it that, it still manages to find the heart of the material that they're adapting. They're loosely, that, you know, certain things. So I think even going back to Zero Year, they'll find, you know, a key portion of that comic and do their own thing with it. But they'll still manage to be true to it at the same time. And that's what I really loved about One Bad Day. I thought it was gripping. Is there anything that Jordan didn't mention that you want to specify before we move on to No Man's Land, the finale?
Well, actually, a little more low-key in, you know, One Bad Day, and this kind of was follow-up on a No Man's Land, is while Bruce and Selina's relationship has been, you know, mending this season and getting closer back to the reconciliation, there's another relationship that Selina has that's been growing kind of in the background during this whole time. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Alfred?
Yeah. Like, I thought that at the end of One Bad Day, when he actually invites Selena, like, oh, Miss Kyle, are you going to stay for snacks or whatever it was? Like, I actually thought that was a big step because these two have had a very odd relationship over the course of the show. Like, he kind of was barely tolerating her and
he slapped her.
He slapped her. But then even after that, yeah, like he never was truly comfortable with her relationship with Bruce. You know, he thought she was a bad influence on him. And I see him getting season two is like where I first started to see the change a little bit, where like at the end, like when Bruce said, oh, I was going to save myself from Galavan the whole time, Selina and Alfred kind of give each other like a mutual look of like what? And that was like the first time that I felt that like they had a positive interaction. And then, you know, but he still was kind of apprehensive around her, and then when she showed up to the birthday party, instead of Alfred, you know, like kind of like fighting for his territory or fighting for Bruce's attention, he just walked away automatically, like knowing I'm gonna give these two teenagers their, like, you know, time together. Like he's like slowly been more at peace with her, to the point now where like not only is he accepting her as of the end of One Bad Day, but in No Man's Land, yes, he is the one to be her protector and to like go away with her. So the Alfred and Selina relationship is not one that's thought of a lot, but it is something that the show has been dealing with in the background. And I thought that was kind of special. Yeah.
That's a great point, Josh, because it's something that I have always loved in the comics. Going back, I'll reference Hush again in the scene in the Batcave when, oh my goodness, I love this scene so much, when Alfred basically tells Selina, like, you don't even understand how much you're helping him, how much he loves you, and how much you being here. Like, she's like, I want to help, and he's like, you just being here for Bruce helps him so much. And so I've always loved Alfred and Selina having that kind of relationship. There's the scene in Batman number 44 recently when Alfred sees Selina coming back after she stole her wedding dress, and she just tells him, she's just like, shh. And then he just looks at her, and I just love their dynamic, and I love it when Alfred himself is a Batcat shipper, and that he wants Bruce to be happy with her. I think he understands that she's the one for Bruce, and he understands how much they love each other, and I love when he wants them to be together. So I'm so happy that they've gotten to a place like that on the show, because I was furious when that scene happened when Alfred slapped Selina earlier in the series. I was just furious, and I'm so happy that we've gotten past that.
Yeah, he's defending Reggie, the guy who stabbed him. Like, how dare you do that to Reggie? Like, Reggie stabbed you, asshole.
And the funny thing is, I didn't know you back then, but if I did, I would have probably laughed at that scene just because it would have bothered you.
Oh my goodness! I do not know why you take pleasure in my.
Because I know the level of which you react to things, and that's why I think so much pleasure.
Well, I do love how, like, a few episodes later, Selina crashes a date with Bruce and Silver St. Cloud, and she's, like, drinking the tea or whatever it was. She's like, Alfred, this tea tastes just like a punch in the face.
Yes, that was great. Speaking of which, okay, because we weren't doing this show back in Gotham Season 2, I've got to mention, I'm trying to figure out where these new Batcat scenes that we got in One Bad Day rank compared to what was previously my favorite scene in. I actually said when we got a question, we got a listener question in a while back from, I think, Joseph Golden, asking what our favorite live action DC TV moments were of all time.
I think it was just DC TV.
It was just DCTV, because otherwise this wouldn't have been my pick. Otherwise I would have picked something from The Dark Knight Rises.
Either way.
So I think it was just DCTV. Or if it was DC Comics period, then I probably would have picked something from Tom King's run. But anyway, I think the specification was DCTV. Anyway, I picked the scene where Bruce basically tells Selina what he told to Silver with the whole the best liars always tell the truth, and he basically pours his heart out to Selina, but indirectly, and basically she's like, and that was true, and Bruce says yes, but not about her. And that was previously my favorite scene in not just this show, but in all of live-action DCTV, but I think that I might have a new pick for what that is based on One Bad Day. So I'm going to have to reassess my ranking, but I think that perhaps.
Well, we'll do a special episode in the final season of Gotham, and we'll have something along those lines where we pick our favorite moments and episodes.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
It'll give us an excuse to reinvite our guest back, since if he wants to come back and listen to you.
Anytime.
But let's talk about the finale, and then we'll wrap things up. As great as, you know, One Bad Day is, I think the finale holds itself well, you know, as another one of my favorite episodes, because I just think one of the things, everything's coming to a head, you know, that's been building up throughout 4B, and, you know, and even some leftovers a little bit with Ra's al Ghul from 4A. But What I loved about it was that whereas the callbacks to, you know, this is where the interrogation scene happens, correct? Which is, you know, reminiscent of the Dark Knight scene. It's a nice reminder of that. But then just signifies the impressiveness of David Mazouz and Cameron Monaghan together on screen, but also the scene where the bridges are exploding, is very reminiscent of Bane and The Dark Knight Rises. And just give me a call back to kind of that that imagery when I was watching the finale. And then what struck to me as just a wow moment was the ending with Bruce and Alfred on the rooftop with the
Gordon.
Bruce and Gordon, yeah, on the rooftop with the what will become the bat signal. That was amazing to see because I had always pegged that was going to be the series finale moment, except he'd be Batman. And so to see it this early is great, but it makes me wonder what are they going to do in the finale, the series finale.
Well, it might be a similar scene, but he's going to be actually in the costume.
But I really enjoyed the finale. Now, so one of the questions I want to get to you guys is, and then we'll you guys can share your thoughts on the finale in depth if you want. But at the end, when that man bat looking character is shown on screen,
mm-hmm.
and with the other guy the other character that's wearing the mask, could that be?
And don't we found out who those are?
Oh, did we?
It's yes, because I didn't know that. Remember when we talked about the news that Mother and Orphan were coming next season?
Okay.
That was them. I didn't realize it was them because they look so different than how they look in the comics with those weird mask things that are actually really creepy. But yeah, that was Mother and Orphan that we thought.
Okay, I thought they were gonna go man bat. I didn't realize that. All right.
I think that might be. I'm not talking about him.
Yeah, man bat was there too. Man bat was in the church, and then Mother and Orphan were in that creepy room.
Okay, so it was man bat. Okay.
That's
where it's going. Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure. But what did you guys? What were your thoughts on the finale? Just speak to that, Joshua. What is your?
I do have to say, you know, again, and we said this on my show too, which I don't know which show will come out first, but because I'm still editing mine, and people are still sending clips, but that Orphan is not Cassandra Cain. Like, there's other orphans in the comics, and this orphan is a young boy.
I had assumed it was going to be Cassandra Cain just because of the fact that in the comics she has such a big role in No Man's Land.
Yeah, no, Orphan was that little boy with the axe.
I couldn't tell if it was a girl or a boy because he was wearing that mask and it was all dark.
Well, the actor is a boy. You know, like I looked it up because there's a lot of people actually theorizing that this is going to be Martine, and this is not Martine's actor, but I mean, you know, Firefly and, you know, Scarecrow had new actors.
And Orphan have both been cast already.
Well, they're wearing masks, so they can be stunt doubles, you know, for a while. Like, we can get a different Mother and Orphan next season. Like I think it's. I think when Michonne showed up on Walking Dead, they had like a stunt double be her as a silhouette in the season finale, and then like they cast her for like the actual season proper.
Josh, did you read Batman and Robin Eternal? Because I did, and I loved Mother in it. But Adam,
I read portions of it, but like no, like not enough of it.
Well, then I'll give you the same recommendation I gave Adam, which is to read the rest of that because I thought Mother was such a great villain in that story.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Yeah, it's so I didn't buy the speculation that Orphan could be Martine until like I was like, you know what, that does kind of look like him, and if like the set if the costume designers like had him wear that outfit and have that haircut on purpose, maybe it's supposed to be him. And remember when we first met Martine, he was like gonna light a kid's backpack on fire, and he was all too happy when Penguin was like showing him how to like stab things. So like, you know,
I want to know what Jan's reaction will be if that's Martine.
she didn't believe me when like,
oh,
she
really?
Was like, yeah, she was like, it's not Martine, it's not like, and the subject moved on, but it's
I can see your point that it could be.
Well, when he was kidnapped too, he was like drawing like, you know, cartoons of like mutilating his captors, like that. This is not like, you know, a sweet innocent little boy. He's he's gonna grow up to like, you
he's
know,
one disturbed individual.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one disturbed, so I could see him being Orphan, and that would work because it would give him a connection to Penguin too. Yeah. So that, but it could just be a different character because, you know, who has a Martinez character design. I did not like the Man-Bat design. I hope that they improve it by next year.
Yeah.
The joke I made on my show was it looked like a big bad Beetleborgs monster. Whoa, okay. I was like, I don't know if this is a crowd that knows Big Bad Beetleborgs or not.
Yeah, that went over my head.
Okay. Big Bad Beetleborgs was like, it was on around the same time as Power Rangers. And
see,
like,
you say Power Rangers, I'm there, but yeah.
Yeah, like, so, well, Power Rangers have been on for like 50 years,
it's,
you know,
older,
but like,
it's, almost, well, it's not older than
but like, Power Rangers Prime, in other words. Yeah. But like, anyway, like, one of the subplots of Big Bad Beetleborgs was like when the kids weren't in their Beetleborg Sentai outfits, they would hang out at this haunted house with like these like really, really, really poorly like bad budgeted like movie monsters. Like there was like a mummy and a Frankenstein and a werewolf and this like Jay Leno-esque like ghost called Flabber or something. And
I kind of want to check the show out now. I got to be honest with you.
It's worth a Google and a YouTube. Yeah.
To quote the Joker in the Lego Batman movie, probably worth a Google.
That's where I got that from. Like, probably worth the Google. But yeah, like, it's like, oh man. But like, the monsters were just very, very like cheesy, and the costumes were like, you know, dollar store esque. And like, that's what this reminded me of with the Man Bats. I'm like, oh. Mother and Orphan, you know, I'm curious about that because Gotham does violence and like horror really well. Like when Gotham embraces like the horror aspect of the show, they do good. So, you know, excited about that. There was a deleted scene of Lady Shiva because the script for this actually leaked months ago. Not the complete script, but like portions of the script. So like I knew that like Mother and Orphan and Man-Bat and Lady Shiva were coming, but they only showed Mother and Orphan and Man-Bat. I also knew that Selina was going to be shot because, like, the script scene where, like, Bruce says to Jeremiah, like, you tortured Alfred, you shot Selina. I was like, oh, okay, Selina's going to get shot at one point.
You, oh my, I can't even imagine how I would have felt if I knew that ahead of time. Like, I would have just been in agony.
Oh, waiting. Somebody should private message you that. Just that screenshot. I would have paid somebody to do it back then. Damn it, if I would only knew.
Well, if there's any Selena leaks next time, maybe I'll be able to. Maybe I'll be able to.
If it's a good one,
no, if it's a negative thing, leak it to him. I'll send you $10 via PayPal.
If it's Bruce and Selena,
it'll be the easiest $10 you'll make.
if it's Bruce and Selena exchanging "I love yous" and then kissing, then
no, we don't
want to
send
please
that.
Please do send it.
No, that just feels like craziness. But go ahead, continue.
Craziness. To quote the Joker. I'm just
Selina returns to Gotham and Bruce is already engaged to Julie Madison.
Oh, no, God. God. You have no idea.
No.
John Stevens and Bruno Heller and all those people, if you're listening, get on that.
Why do you put these things in my head?
I love it.
Oh, they're not gonna introduce Julie Madison in Gotham. And if they do, she'd probably be a villain like every other woman on the show is. Like,
I was so worried about Grace this season, and then I'm glad we never saw her again.
I really thought that something was gonna come with it. I thought she was gonna be like Talia.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad she wasn't.
Because I was like, but I mean,
I'm so glad she was.
Alexander Siddig did not know who Talia was when I interviewed him. Like, this is in the interview. Like, you can, like, hear this on the podcast, and it's on YouTube, too.
I remember that. He's looked on his lucky face. I wish I didn't.
Yeah. Wow. You are a diehard shipper.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But, yeah, I say to him, like, are we going to get a Talia? He's like, I don't know what that is. I say, that's your daughter. And he's like, oh, well, I have a daughter. I'm so like you know, like what was it? How It Should Have Ended, Darth Vader style.
Yeah.
And then he deadpans. Well, obviously, if I didn't know that, then no Talia. Yeah, I thought Grace was gonna be something. But yeah,
I was worried. I'm so glad she never showed back up again. She's a character unlike Alan and Montoya and Harvey Dent, and I'm glad. just went by the wayside.
Well, and unlike Alan and Montoya, we don't, like, need to know where she is, because it's not like she's working at the GCPD or anything like that. Or,
like, can you say GCPD? Is that just a natural instinct now for you?
GCPD.
It's Gordon doing his bat voice. I love it.
Yeah, well, the Gordon voice, which is like evolved over the course of the show.
It is. It's not that different from his Batman voice in Batman Year One, honestly.
I need to rewatch Batman Year One, like with like Ben McKenzie in mind. That would be really interesting. No Man's Land, you know, No Man's Land. Like, let's see, you know, yeah, I like the monsters taking over everything at the end of the montage, the territories. Like, I thought that was you know, great, and I like that in the comics. But yeah.
All right, Jordan, what's your thought on the any other additions you want to make to what we've already said?
Yeah, well, I already talked about my thoughts on, you know, the Bruce and Selina stuff, sure, yeah, or lack thereof, yeah, in that episode. But again, I love part of that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was cool seeing Raish and Jeremiah work together, because, mm-hmm, like, I thought they made a really formidable duo. I loved, again, all the Jeremiah stuff, like Cameron Monaghan just killing it. And yeah, I loved too at the end seeing all the villains stake out their territories. That was awesome. Yeah. Setting up No Man's Land.
I can't wait.
And then the final, yeah, me neither. And then the final rooftop scene was awesome as well. One, not in the finale, but one thing I forgot to mention earlier this season. Actually, I've got two things I want to mention really quickly.
Sure.
Just brief things. One, we forgot to mention a certain villain I wanted to bring up, which is Toymaker. And I was so excited to see him on Gotham this season, because he's a villain who was an original creation for the animated series The Batman, which, again, I'll say it again, my favorite animated series, and it's what made me a diehard,
you
know, Batman.
When we do reviews of that, you're going to be in heaven, aren't you? You're just going to be...
When we do The Batman?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, dude. Oh, my goodness.
All right, I'll delay that as much as possible, and good to know. Note to
oh,
self,
my goodness. Just... You're awful. Especially when we do the Batcat episode in that show. Oh, my goodness. It'll be... I will be...
All right, stay on par. All right, let's go. Back to Gotham. Let's go.
But yes, they adapted. I was so surprised that they did it, and I was so happy, because he's a very obscure villain who was just created for that show, and I loved him on The Batman, and I thought it was so cool that they adapted him on Gotham. I was like, to see an obscure character from my favorite animated series make that jump to live action was... I mean, that was awesome. So I loved him. And then the other thing I wanted to say before I forget was that it was Cameron Bicadova's birthday this week. So I wanted to say happy belated birthday to Cameron.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday. Cameron.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do what we always do to end the review. We're going to rate this thing. So, Joshua, you're the guest of honor. Why don't you give us your rating of Gotham Season 4?
Letter grade, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, letter grade. Okay. I'm thinking either a B+ or an A-. I'm going to go with A-, because I feel like this was possibly my favorite season of the show. And if not my favorite season in years. Like, I felt like it was very, very strong. And it's, you know, with episodes like One Bad Day and everything. And this season was really personal for me, because, like, I was more involved in covering it than I have been the last few years. Like, I interviewed the cast 5 times over the course of, like, this season, and, you know, and followed the news more closely. So, yeah, it's, I've been living, breathing, and eating Gotham, you know, since it came back. So it's going to be interesting.
That's the life, dude.
This long break.
Yeah,
I'm gonna see my family again. Maybe catch up on some other shows.
Yeah, it'll be weird, but it'll be sweet when it comes back. You'll have 13 weeks to really just.
I hope that maybe they find a way to give it a full season, but, like, yeah, like the word on the street is 13, so that's probably what it's gonna be.
Well, we'll wait and see. I'm sure we'll get some info on that, maybe at Comic-Con, hopefully. But Jordan, what's your rating on season 4?
I'm gonna give season 4 an A+. It wouldn't have gotten quite that high a grade before. It was probably sitting at an A at the mid-season. But all the Batcat stuff in the second half of the season, it would be impossible for me to not to give it an A+. I loved it. Yeah. A+.
Good. And I'm going to go ahead and continue with the general theme of handing out A grade, A kind of grades. And I'm going to give it a flat A. I thought it was great, and it was one of my it may be my personal favorite season. I didn't really have any hangups in terms of, you know, I didn't really like this episode or I didn't really like this moment. I generally liked the whole season from beginning to end, and it contains at least two of my favorite episodes of the series. So I gotta give it the A. But that about wraps it up for us. Let everyone know, we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, which is graciously hosted by the folks at Batman on Film, and there are other Batman-related podcasts there if you want more Bat Talk. In terms of social media plugs, Joshua, where can people find you on Twitter or Instagram or wherever to talk more Gotham or whatever they want with you?
Yeah, it's hard for me to maintain multiple social media accounts. I have an Instagram, but it's pretty much inactive. Okay. I only used it at work to keep up with, you know, people at work that I had to keep up with that had Instagrams. Sure. Twitter, I am at TBU. That's TB, you know, not D, because the letters sound similar. The TBU Josh, because I've had a few Twitters over the years, but I always fell off of it. But Dustin, our editor-in-chief at the BatmanUniverse.net, he wanted all the staff to, like, have Twitters to promote our stuff. So right after Comic-Con, when we were promoting, like, our latest round of stuff, I got a Twitter for, like, the fifth or sixth time. And I've actually been pretty consistent with this one, you know, on again, off again. And, you know, I've mostly been using it for Gotham-related stuff, so because I could go a little more crazier on Twitter about Gotham than I can on my Facebook, so you know, tweeting at various things and cast sure. members and sharing pictures, you know and stories about cast members and stuff like that. I think I just posted the Cameron Bikendova picture for her birthday from me and her and Ben at the DC and DC Black Lightning party.
I didn't see that. I'm gonna have to check that out.
You liked it. I got a notification.
He's so engrossed in everything Batman Catwoman that he doesn't even remember what he did.
Wait, I swear I got a notification. Like, Jordan liked your, you know, like, Cameron Bikendova birthday tweet. Like, what? I'm going through my Twitter right now.
I'm going through it now, yeah.
Maybe it's a different... Oh, you know what? This is a different Jordan.
Oh, that's funny.
This is a different
Jordan. Yeah, I had not seen this. I'm looking at it now. That is so cool.
So there's actually a semi-funny story behind that picture, too. But, yeah. Okay, I was like,
if it's the story you've told on the Gotham Chronicle, then I think I know what the story is.
The dancing story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. I'm gonna check that. I'm gonna check that out as soon as we wrap.
Yeah, and
So that's the one that they should follow you at and keep up with.
And my Facebook is my name, Joshua Lappin Bertone. I'm the only. There's three Lappin Bertonis in the world. There's, you know, my brother and my sister and me. So I shouldn't be too hard to find on there. So just as long as you, if we don't have any mutual friends and you send me a friend request, just send me a message saying that you heard me on this or something. So I'll accept you. Cause otherwise, like, you know,
he has no clue who you are.
Well, otherwise, yeah, I don't accept random stuff, but, like, if I see that that you're, like, mutual friends with, like, a few of the comic book podcast people, I'm like, oh, it's a listener to the podcast. Okay, I'll add you.
Cool.
Definitely check out the BatmanUniverse.net. I do content on there. We alluded to earlier that I did a thing examining the Bat-Cat relationship in Batman issue 44. I did a long article about the history of Barbicane in the comics, which a minor character, that article wound up being like 3,000 words. So, and I'm hoping to do more content for them over the summer. And yeah, check out, the Gotham Chronicle podcast. If you want your podcast to be more nonsensical and more musical, it's kind of like the Family Guy of podcasts, where, like, Family Guy will do those, like, random, like, cutaway jokes that have no bearing on the plot. Like, that's kind of what Gotham Chronicle has become over time. Like, we'll just be podcasting and be like, ooh, what if Gordon, you know, rode on Aladdin's magic carpet and fought, you know, like Shredder from Ninja Turtles. Like, it's
I'd watch that.
That's not something that we've said on the podcast, but like, it's not far off from like
the weird that you brought it up.
Yeah, like at one point, Jam was like, you know, talking about Hugo Strange giving Jerome like Velociraptor legs, and like,
oh my god,
we just
it gets crazy, but it's fun. It's a ton of fun.
Yeah,
and you know, when you're covering Gotham, sometimes you gotta get a little crazy because the plots are crazy.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot crazy. Like, it became the podcast. You know, like Jordan talked about listening to season one, the podcast became a musical comedy show so gradually that, like, nobody noticed.
That's too good. So, yeah, definitely check out the podcast and follow him on those outlets that he provided. Jordan, where can people get caught up in all your Batman, Catwoman wedding hoopla?
Oh, yes, yes, because there is a lot
because
of that going on my
97.3% of his Twitter. I just wanted to
throw yeah, you know, that might even be a little bit low. Yes, you can find me and all of my Batcat ramblings, because there's a lot of them, on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV. I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews, so if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, well, we'd appreciate hearing from you in the form of an iTunes review. Yeah, thank you.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Superhero Sci-Fi. And I'll talk about anything, Batman, superheroes, sports, whatever the heck you want to talk about, except football, because damn it, Fox. So anything but football. But yeah, so find me there at Superhero Sci-Fi. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope that it'll get you through the Gotham hiatus, which is going to be quite long. And until next time, have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful week ahead. So long, everyone.
Batcat forever.
Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.